Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio! Anyone listening? Anyone listening? Knock, knock! Listen, listen, this is Sammy Callahan, and you're listening to him on Yakuza Kick Radio. You better all listen!
Yakuza Radio, love the name, Yakuza.
You know what I'm saying? My homie J Cat and the homie Eric.
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
All you had to do was listen to your Cruise Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look what that got you, homie. Fuck that. Black me. How?
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town, and it's Yakuza Kick Radio. And we're taking over.
And you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Into Yakuza Kick Radio. Oh, snap.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird. Ooh.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
J-Cat and fucking Eric Lawrence cannot fucking keep this from the public that they are fucking dyed-in-the-wool, true-blue fucking members of fucking Cult Fiction, and motherfuckers need to keep that shit in fucking mind.
That's right. It's June 9th, 2011. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J-Cat Morris, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Eric Williams. What's poppin', Eric?
Hey, J-Cat, how you doing today? Another fun show. You know, we switched up the intro a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it just gets better and better, you know what it is. So, yeah, another interesting show. It's been hot as fuck out this bitch for 2 days, and speaking of the heat, I'll be watching my Heat on mute as we do the show tonight because it's Game 5, and LeBron better not
be
here
tonight. I heard Kobe's at your house watching the game with you.
Well, he might not be at my house, but he's watching the game just like me and everybody else who's watching the game. So,
nice.
All you Laker fans, that's a damn shame. But, you know, it is what it is. Like I said, if you're watching that on mute, I hope LeBron doesn't fuck us again tonight. We need a little more than 8 points out of someone that everyone's calling the next Jordan. So, anyway, this is a wrestling show. A lot of wrestling shit going on. We definitely have our guest, as everybody has waited for, is B-Boy tonight. So it's pretty big. It's going to be a great show, and I really can't
wait.
So we're gonna get into that in just a little bit. But before that, I'd like to quick promote CZW. I will be attending that on Saturday.
They have a show this weekend? Anyway,
yes, they do.
They
have a pretty stacked lineup. I mean, they got 10 matches stacked on the lineup right now. And not really sure why there's not a world title match on that lineup, but 10 matches without a world title match. So,
yeah, I don't understand that either.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on with that. You know, maybe some pop-up stuff when we get there. Who knows? But, you know, it's only 2 weeks away from Tournament of Death as well. So there's a lot of things going on with CZW. So, I guess, you know, we could run over that card real quick. Junior heavyweight title on the line, Adam Cole, defending against Jonathan Gresham. I'm not really sure where Gresham got his number one contendership from, but, it should be a good match. I have no problem with it.
Hey, real quick, we want to say give a shout-out to Juan, Paul, and Billy Graham, Danny Havoc fans as well.
Yes, yes. We have quite a few people in the chat room. Big shout-out to every one of them in there. So that's what's up. But like I said, it doesn't seem like a bad match. You got Philly's Most Wanted defending the tag team championships against Azrael and Bandito Jr. Again, don't really have a problem with it. Don't know where the guys get their number one contendership from. But, you know, again, I don't really care. As long as they put on a good match, that's all I care about.
Right.
You got the Wire TV Championship being defended. Drew Gulak taking on AR Fox. You have the Ultraviolent Underground Championship being defended. Danny Havoc defending against 13. You have a rematch from last month with a different stipulation in Drake Younger against Scotty Vortex for the spot in Tournament of Death 10, tables, ladders, and chairs match. That's sure going to be banging in there. Their fucking dog collar match last month was crazy. You got the new Blackout, represented by Ruckus and Alex Colon versus the Runaways. You have a bit of a showcase match, I would imagine, in Kyoko Inoue against Sumi Sukai. In a women's match, a very rare women's match on CZW. So, you know, should be good. I mean, these girls are veterans, no fucking question about it. Should be good. You have, if Little Mondo wins, he has entered into Tournament of Death 10, and he is taking on DJ Hyde. So, let that speak for itself. Jake Crist will be taking on Sammy Callahan. I'm looking forward to that match. I think that's definitely going to be one of the more high-impact matches on the card. Two tremendous workers, and yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. Then they have, and I just spoke, you know, a few things about matches that didn't get number one contenderships. They just got matches. But, however, a number one contendership for the Wired title. And that's Ryan McBride, Ty Hagen, VSK, I don't know who the hell that is, Ricky Reyes, Ryan Eagles, and Akuma. A six-man number one contenders for the Wired title. So, again, no mention of a world title. A bunch of title shots that I really don't think were earned by anybody. But, hey, you know, it is what it is. What do you think about that?
I'm pissed off that nobody is mentioning about the world title. Not even fucking announced. No title
yet. Yeah, I mean, it should be something mentioned about it. But either way, you know, I'm sure something will happen. They'll do something with it. You know, does it every show, so I would imagine he would be there. So, don't know what else you want to get into real quick before we have our guest on. Billy's in the chat. I might as well point out that Billy was 100% wrong, and China is doing a porno. Well, has done a porno. And our friend Brett Maddie could definitely send him the link to that, as he did me the other day. So, and she's going full-fledged on that as well, and she's taking bookings.
So book her soon for your invited.
She's taken back to our bookings, right? Right as we speak. So
yeah. I mean, maybe book her for a porno or something, you know? Somebody can book for porno.
Yeah. No problem. yeah, so Billy can sign up because I know Billy was looking to go laugh at a bank with China and make one of himself, and she's fully available, so have at it, my bro.
Oh, boy, but he said yeah, but there was no double-ass penetration.
Yeah, I know. Obviously going into there.
And he said, and they were not the two biggest cocks in porn.
Yeah, well, I'm not in the business of measuring cocks in porn, but I'll take your word for it, Billy. there was, you know, just a little, I don't know, man. That's fine. But either way, it did happen. It did go down. Yeah, there was a lot of rumors going into it. There were going to be two dick in the ass. Everything else, yeah, who knows, man. I'm definitely not on the research team for that, so.
Oh, boy, Billy's saying I will bang her for bucks any day of the week.
Yes, I know. Yes. Well aware. Plus that dude, he says. Okay.
Yeah, plus
that
dude.
That's TMI, bro. Oh, okay, shit. He kept typing. Meanwhile, I thought he was going to fuck China and that dude for bucks, but he said and the dude got to fuck the two other chicks, so. Okay, that's a much better statement.
Good, definitely.
So no, for the record, Billy would not fuck the dude.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's always something going on over here. But like I said, CZW's got their show going on. Man, I really don't have shit to talk about with Raw because it was pretty much garbage. I don't know, I'm just not down with it anymore. It does zero for me. I get through that. Yeah, I get through that shit in, like, 30 seconds on my TiVo. Like, I just watch it in, like, super fast forward, and then I watch, like, some other shit. Like, within the hour, I'm watching something completely different, and I'm, like, 10, 15 minutes into it at least. So,
right.
Yeah, it's, yeah, they're bugging out in the chat. You know. So, But, yeah, what else is up, man?
No, like you said, it's all garbage. I actually gave up on that shit a while ago.
Yeah. And, you know, of course everybody's seen the whole, you know, Ultimate Warrior bugging out and, you know, cutting promos on Hogan and looking all bald and still jacked and whatnot. And, you know, he's bugging out over shit that happened fucking 20 years ago and that. I don't really know where he's going with that, but that's, you know. It's just as soon as people start getting attention, they run with it. And it's just, you know, he put out a really good heartfelt statement and everything about, you know, the Macho Man's passing. And everybody, he was like, oh, wow, you know what? He's not such a bad dude. And then he's like, you know what, Hogan? Fucking starts doing that thing. And it's just like, you know what? I don't know. The dude's a fucking nutcase. I mean, you knew that from back in the day when he was doing his fucking videos and all of that shit, you know, his promos. But either way, man, he physically changed his name to Warrior and then went into politics. I mean, if that's not a crazy fucking idea, then I don't know what is, but you know, that's just me. That's fine. But yeah, it's hilarity. It's pretty much making its internet rounds with him bugging out on Hogan and then, you know, Hogan's doing the same, but it's all good. Yeah, big shout out to OMG in the chat room as well. We got quite a crowd with us. Yeah, man. Just waiting on the guests at this point. It's about due. Billy hates Hogan and Helwig, which is, you know, pretty much expected. Most people do. And, definitely
still,
yeah.
Still waiting on Benny, I do believe. Are you there?
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah, B-Boy will be calling in just a minute. We got a lot to talk to B-Boy about, and we've been waiting on doing that. Unfortunately, B-Boy couldn't be with us last week. You know, he ended up getting called in last minute. Our friend Billy Graham filled in last minute. Big shout out to him as always. now been on our show 5-6 times. I mean, just tremendous amounts that he's put into our show. So always big shout out to Billy.
Well, every time Billy comes on the air, it's always something. You know, I always learn something new every day from Billy.
Right. Another thing, yeah, Tough Enough. You know, I mean, this fucking edge looking kid won, and I mean, I guess that's cool. This edge looking kid.
I never heard of it. Didn't watch it. Don't give a two shits of that. Tough Enough. It's gonna be pretty much. They're gonna get released in 6 months anyway. So you know what I mean.
Well, I don't know. I forget what the kid's name is anyway, but this edge-looking kid won. And I was just glad it wasn't that other Luke kid. Although, you know, half of these guys are under fucking contract anyway. But I don't know what the fuck he just said. Andy. Yeah, Andy's the name of the kid. And I don't know. I mean, he doesn't look like he has any fucking personality to him. He's got some height and all of that, and I know the WWE likes that. But, I mean, Luke was a fucking douchebag, and... you know, it was just is what it is there. It was, he was just an arrogant little bitch, and Stone Cold started getting mad with him and yelling at him, and he started tearing up and shit. You could just tell he's cardboard, man. Like, he's just badass to the motherfucking, the cameras, and as soon as someone bitches him, he backed down. So it was, I liked the little hunchback kid. That's the one I liked. He fucked up a lot down the stretch, though, so I understand him getting bounced off of there, but I liked the little hunchback kid, man. He had some swag to him. You ain't watched none of that shit, though, huh?
Nah, I don't care about that shit. Give me 1 second. I got to see who's calling. Somebody calling.
All right. So, yeah. Well, I hope to see the Hunchback Kid back on WWE TV because I think he's good. You know, he needs a shitload of work, but all of them do, really. Minus M-Dog, who got bounced stupid early.
Okay, J-Cat.
All right. At this time, I'd like to welcome, without further ado, our guest, the New Age Punisher, B-Boy.
What's up, guys?
Hey, what's going on, man?
I'm chilling, homie. How's it going on over there?
Cool. It's hot as shit, but, you know, I'm sure in Cali ain't no different.
Actually, you'd be surprised. Like, I keep hearing on the East Coast that it's fucking hot as shit over down here. It's still like a mid-70s right now.
Wow. Yeah, it's cooling off a little, but today was like 102.
Well, fuck that noise.
Yeah, I hear you. But, yeah, we figured we'd bring you on, you know, talk about a lot of stuff. Your name's been coming up quite often lately, and it ain't good. I mean, it's, you know, it seems like the second you left the scene, a lot of people had a lot of bad things to say about you, and it's only right to let the other side speak his piece, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate it. First off, let me just apologize for my class, because I was supposed to be on last week, and I got called in to work and shit like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the first thing that became, you know, pretty much the icebreaker on everybody opening their mouth was the anniversary show. You're supposed to come in, and it was supposed to be the big B-Boy Drake 3, and it didn't happen. And immediately, DJ got in the ring, and he pretty much said that you had the opportunity to come, you didn't want to be there, and you didn't want to do it for the fans, you didn't want to do it for CCW, and it's not his fault, and everything else. And some people have even agreed with it worker-wise, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but I mean, what's your whole side of it?
All right, well, but basically, when it comes down to DJ, there's things that I like about DJ, and there's things that I dislike about DJ. Before we get into the anniversary, let me talk about those things real quick. First and foremost, I'll say the things that I like about DJ. DJ, without a doubt, has my respect on one factor. And the reason that I respect DJ is because he actually took the initiative to keep CZW, to keep going. And that's something that I commend him on. That's something that nobody else probably would have done. And that's something that he was passionate and driven to do. And that's what I commend him for, and I respect him for that. Another thing that I like about DJ is that personally I like him. Business side, there are things that I don't like about him, but one thing that I like about DJ on the business side is that he's actually pretty quite smart, almost to the point, because he mended the broken fences on Big Japan. He's been doing connections with WXW, you know, all the international flavor that's coming in. It's all DJ.
Yeah.
And I like how he does business on that end, and he tries to keep the business side of things going and keeping relationships and business relationships going, which is a good business move, and it's smart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those are two things that I like from DJ. The things that I dislike from DJ, and I'll tell it to his face, and he probably already knows how I feel about certain situations and everything like that, is that first and foremost, DJ would throw anybody under the bus to make himself look good. And I was a classic example of that. And I'll get into that in a little bit.
Okay.
Another thing is that he has fully admitted this to me on numerous occasions, is that he's very power driven. He likes the power that he has. He likes telling people what to do. He likes he's very power hungry. You know what I mean? And that's something that he's admitted to me. And I think in a promoted sense, you have to be like that, but you also got to cool down on it too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the situation on what happened. It's basically this. Let's go. What we'll do is we'll go back to Cage of Death. And I'm not going to talk about Death's thing right now. I'm going to talk about me and DJ's thing right here.
Okay.
What it came down to at Cage of Death was a couple weeks prior to Cage of Death, I gave DJ a call because Jersey All-Pro was flying me in. And that's when Liger was in town.
Right.
And I told DJ that I'm going to be in. And I told him, I said, look, I want to be a part of Cage of Death. I feel like it's a good move to do so, you know what I mean? And I told him, I just basically told him that I wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And at Cage of Death, so it was in the works from there. A couple of days later, me and DJ kept in communication throughout the whole time. And there was three things that DJ told me was a possibility of happening. One of them was I wasn't going to be on the show. Which I would have been bummed about, but would have understood.
Yeah.
Two was the run-in that I did at Cage of Death. Well, it wasn't really run-in; it was a walk-in because they had me do specific things, which was stupid.
Yeah.
And then the third thing that was supposed to happen, and this is straight out of DJ's mouth, while I was in communicating with them, was that I was supposed to be. Another possibility was I was going to be in the cage. And I asked DJ, all right, so if that happens with the cage, the concept and everything like that, I said, how are we going to do that? And he goes, I'll probably do like a surprise thing and then a surprise for Cult Fiction and then I might be in there later or something like that.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, cool. So those are the three possibilities that was going in. A couple of days later, me and DJ were talking about the anniversary show and, we were talking about, you know, the voucher and shit like that, because those who don't know, DJ doesn't have money. He's hurting on money. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, at that time, he was hurting on money. So the whole free voucher thing came out, and I told him, look, I have a couple free vouchers, or I have, like, one free voucher. I could do the anniversary show and everything like that. So he put me on the cage. And on that point, I didn't know what I was doing. And then we brought up the three possibilities of what was going on again. Either nothing, the running, or being a part of the cage. Now, this is what DJ told me. If I am a part of the cage, there's a point to where I'm either going to come out right when it starts, halfway or maybe at the end, or something like that. Or he even said that I might even take somebody's spot on the Faces team. And I go, well, I don't feel comfortable taking a spot. And then he told me that I was supposed to take fucking Dev's spot. I said, I don't feel comfortable taking that. And I guess that's how everything kind of started with Dev. Because somebody probably told him the wrong situation or the wrong thing. And I said, look, I don't feel comfortable taking the Dev spot and everything like that. And so we basically agreed at Cage of Death when I was there that they'd be running the setup for me and Drake at the anniversary.
Right.
And that's basically the rundown at what happened at Cage of Death. To set up me and Drake. Now, during this time, like, if they saw me, like I was hearing all these fucking things that, like, KJ Def, people were telling me that I was running up to DJ, that I was trying to take spots and blah, blah, this and blah, blah, that. First and foremost, that's complete bullshit. The thing that I didn't know what was going on is because DJ kept on switching his mic. He didn't know what I was doing until the day of. So
yeah.
I guess when people saw me going to DJ asking what I was doing, it's because I wanted to know what I was doing. Because bottom line is, to be honest, I just wanted, after the Jersey All-Star show, all I wanted to do was go in the back, drink beer with Kingston and the Briscoes and Flash. That's all I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that's all I wanted to do. And then when when I got there, finally to run in, I was like, all right, cool, I could go drink. Now, when I was drinking or something like that, I guess people were taking things what I was saying seriously, which is fucking retarded, because people who know me know that I don't say shit. And I just say it out of sarcasm. Doesn't mean I'm going to fucking do it. It's just like when you fuck around with your friends and shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I can see how, like, certain things could rub off a certain way, you know what I mean? But, again, you come up to me, you don't fucking talk behind my back, you know what I mean?
Yeah, things went real public real quick, so, you know.
Yeah.
Not really the best way to go about things.
No, exactly. So basically all that didn't happen. So all that happened. Now anniversary comes. Me and DJ were keeping in contact, and it was going down with the whole anniversary thing. I was going with my voucher. Now, the thing is, it's like this is the same company, like American Airlines, this is the same company. I was supposed to be there for down for the sickness earlier on in the year, but I wasn't able to make it because this airline fucked me over on the voucher.
Uh-huh.
And so I wasn't able to make that, and that's basically like the done deal of that. So me and DJ kept in contact about the whole situation. Basically, he was asking about the voucher. I said, I already sent it in. Blah, 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 blah. Getting details of the voucher. I needed to send a customer account, like a customer account number to go with it, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that.
Right.
So a couple days later, or not a couple days, a week passes by, and it's getting closer to the anniversary. I still didn't get my voucher in the mail. I was asking them, am I going to get the voucher at the airline? They said no, because they still needed a customer reference number that they were still trying to find. Keeping in contact with DJ. Blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. They're giving me the runaround. DJ goes, okay, just tell me what's going on. I say, cool. A couple days before I fucking fly out, me and DJ talked, and this is basically what happened. I told him, I'm still getting the runaround. I don't know if I'm getting the voucher. What would you like to do? You know what I mean? And DJ goes, well, we can look for a flight. And I said, all right, well, me and you will go online. See if we can find a flight and everything like that. So we go online maybe, I don't know, 3 days before I was supposed to fly out. I started looking around shit, and then I didn't hear from him. Next day I called him. Said, look, I still don't got the voucher, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. I looked online, and then the fucking flights were like $600 to $800 coming from Cali to Philly.
Yeah. It's a lot.
You know what I mean? And, he was just like, do you want to get the flight, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. I said, DJ, I still have the voucher almost coming in the mail. I would hate it that if you pay for this, or I told him I would hate it because I know of the financial things that were going on with him. I know he couldn't afford it, you know what I'm saying? And plus, it would be the company's money to take, and I would feel bad doing it. And I'm sorry, but I don't think I'm worth $600 to $800 to fly out. You know what I mean? All
right.
So I told him, I said, let's go with the voucher thing. Hopefully he comes in. A day after that, basically, I told him, I said, look, the voucher seems like I called American again. Basically, they fucked up my whole shit, and now I don't even have a voucher now because they fucking did some bullshit. And then DJ basically goes, all right, well, and then I told DJ, I said, look, man, the tickets are entirely too much money. I said, why don't we do this? Why don't we just make up an excuse why I wasn't able to be there? And then we'll work something out, like maybe in the next month or the month after, to get something going. And then he goes, all right, man, blah, blah, this. And then we ended off on good terms, and we were just like, and then I asked him before I got off the phone, and I told him, all right, so what's going to be the excuse you're going to use? And he goes, oh, I don't know, I'll think about it, but don't worry about it, Danny, blah, this, blah, that. And that's basically what happened on that, on anniversary. Anniversary show comes. and the show starts. A DJ takes the mic, and I'm getting phone calls upon text from guys in that locker room, DJ's employees, the guys in that locker room telling me what DJ is saying. So right then and there, I was just like, this motherfucker, dude. I can't believe he would just throw me under the bus after everything was cool. We figured out what was going on and everything like that. And after that, we decided to email each other and stuff like that. And he basically told me his side of the story, basically saying that he's had free vouchers before, and it's never happened to him, so it was hard for him to believe that it happened to me. Well, first off, just because it hasn't happened to you doesn't mean it hasn't happened to me. That's like me saying, like, I got in an accident, and he doesn't believe me because he never got in an accident. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's straight-up bullshit for an excuse like that. Second, he goes, and then the second thing he says in the email is just like, we had a flight ready for you. Well, motherfucker, if you really wanted me out there and you really wanted to pay that flight, I would have an itinerary in my email, and I never got one.
Right.
And I was doing him a favor. You know what I'm saying? I know I might have, in people's eyes, fucked over the main event at the anniversary, but I think saving the company money and saving DJ money is more important than that. That's just my opinion.
Right.
If he could use that other money to pay other talent that deservingly needs the money than I do, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I agree. It just fucked up that you come off getting buried in the end as the guy who didn't give a fuck about the fans.
See, and that's one thing that bothers me, man. This is one thing that bothers me, is that, like, I have so much, like the thing, like, I have so much disdain over this guy right now. I wouldn't say that. I've already forgiven and forget and everything like that, but I've been quiet, you know what I'm saying? I haven't said anything. So if I go off on this right now, it's just because, like, I just have all this bottled up in me, and I think it's time for me to be heard and shit, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So when he fucking comes up, or, like, when I'm hearing this and everything like that, and he's saying, basically burying me in front of fans that I worked for fucking 8 years for, fans that I busted my ass for, fans that knew me when I first started with the company, fans that saw me as like, a cornerstone of the company at the end of my career there, and for him to go out there and bury basically my family, because I consider fans a family, it's like to bury me in front of them in such a fashion that he didn't tell the exact truth. Like, it fucking disgusted me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Understand. Definitely understand.
I mean, the thing with DJ is, like, he's, like, the thing with me is this. I've been working 13 years, you know what I'm saying? And then, like, I've been around a lot of shady people in my life. I've had shady friends, shady promoters, everything like that. What kills me is that, like, the stuff that's coming out right now is, like, complete fucking bullshit, especially when I'm thinking they're my boys. You know what I mean? And the fucking thing, it honestly kills me. I mean, and, like, I find it really funny that after I leave, when I'm not there, they're not there to sit in front of my face. They're not there to fucking, you know what I'm saying? They would do it behind, like, they would do it behind a camera. They would do it behind a promo. They would do it on the show. They wouldn't do it in front of my face. To me, it's a straight-up bitch move.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, one of those people I did want to, you know, bring up, you know, what had been said on the interview that came first, and it was actually filmed the day of the anniversary show. Before the anniversary show, the Moxley shoot was filmed. And they had mentioned, you know, they said, you know, well, a guy who's supposed to, they were pretty much going through word association and everything else. And, you know, he said, well, a guy who was supposed to be here today, who's not going to be here today, Benny. And Mox said, I love Benny. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here today. We've socially bonded. I love to hang out with him, but I don't know if I want to be tied to him professionally at all, because a lot of flaky shit keeps happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went on to say, Benny isn't here tonight because he didn't want to be here. Mm-hmm. He had every opportunity to come. He called it a month ago that he wasn't going to show up, and sure enough, he didn't. He's like, I don't care if you don't want to show up, but don't tell people you want to show up. And that's more or less like how he went off. You know, he's just saying that he already knew, and he just said that was just kind of your way. And he said it sucks because DJ is going to catch heat, and he sides with DJ completely. So, I mean, that's just one of the people that said, you know, they're same kind of like what DJ was saying. So, I just, you know, just get your side on that.
Yeah, I'll definitely touch base with that. First and foremost, I love Mox. I love him to death. I wish him nothing but the best. I'm glad he got signed and everything like that. He's a hell of a talent. Considering what he was saying, this brings me back to the whole Cage of Death thing. To where, like, I was messing around in the back saying, I'm not coming back while this and everything like that, and everybody taking it seriously.
Yeah.
That's what it all comes down to. Now, the situation with Mox saying that he wouldn't sign myself professionally and everything like that, well, you know what? The way that I see things is that I've been living off wrestling the past, I would say, 8 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I must have done something good business-wise and something good professionally. If I've been living off wrestling, that so-called makes, like, bullshit money and everything like that, but I was able to live off wrestling. So when it comes to being professional, when it comes to being business-wise, I've made my money and I've made my living off wrestling. And that already counteracts what he says about, like, being professional. The thing about the situation that almost kills me is that, like he said, he was siding with DJ, and it sounds like he's siding with DJ. And you know what? People are going to have their opinion on me, whether it's negative or whether it's positive.
Right.
Bottom line is, unless you come to me and ask me straight up, unless you and everything like that, and if you have a problem of how, like, I deal with things, or if you want to believe somebody else, then you come to me. You don't say shit behind a camera.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what he says, like, it honestly reminds me of, like, a situation to where, like, he completely sides with DJ because maybe, I don't know, maybe DJ got in his head. Maybe he made his own decision. Maybe he saw the situation and everything like that. See, the thing about the anniversary is that there's, like, a little X factor in there as well. Before the anniversary show, that's when Gage got locked up.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, right? Yeah, it was like before the anniversary. It was before the anniversary. Now, I will publicly say this right now, that Gage is far and foremost like a good friend of mine. You know what I mean? At the end of the run, and especially when I was living in Philly, me and Gage became good friends and everything like that. And Gage and myself and Claude were the last remaining CZW old school guys.
Yeah.
And I consider Gage like a good friend of mine and everything like that. During before the anniversary, people were, I guess, going to DJ saying that I didn't want to be there. This is what I was telling people, that I didn't appreciate how DJ came out on TV and basically threw Gage like that. I didn't appreciate what he said. I didn't appreciate him saying that he was his boss. I didn't appreciate him saying like it's all that he makes more money than a lot of other people and everything like that.
He said he makes more money in a week, or more money in a day than most people make in a week, which is...
And that's bullshit. And that's complete, you know what I'm saying? And I didn't appreciate it, especially, like, with Gage's situation, because a lot of people, I shouldn't say this, but it's already publicly known. Gage had he had some demons. He had problems.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying? And fucking that shit killed me that, like, now that Gage was incarcerated, that DJ would come out on TV and publicly say that. If DJ had any respect for Nikki, he wouldn't have come out and said it. Nothing. He would have just been quiet the whole time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He wouldn't have said nothing. And that was a thing that disgusted me, and I was like, man, I don't even know. Like, I made the mistake of saying, man, I don't even know if I want to work there about this because I don't like what DJ did.
Right.
The voucher, but see, this is like how, like, my words can be jumbled up. My voucher was already in effect. And when I said that, people probably took it seriously. But, like, I was going to go out no matter what. But I said that out of emotion. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing that fucking like, that's the thing, maybe how, like, people would have told DJ certain things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think it just sucks how everything is, like, turned around. Instead of, like, knowing the truth about certain situations, everybody turns around. Turns it around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, another, obviously, you know, get the other one out of the way that, you know, is the big one to come out. And you know, we had had Billy on, and we had Billy and Devin on at the same time because Billy was a huge target at Devin's shoot. And, you know, I like Devin. I mean, I chill out with Devin at the shows and everything else, and he's a great cat to me. But, I mean, when he just started going on tirades, and I'd look at him at the shows and be like, I don't know, dog. And he just kept going and going, and the shoot was 10 times worse. And he kind of segued off of fucking bugging on Billy and said, Billy, just shut the fuck up. And he went off of that, said, you're just like fucking Benny. You're like bitch boy. Shut the fuck up. And then Brett paused because Brett was doing the interview, and he goes, okay, we're going to do that later, but go ahead and give us your opinions on him. And that's when he just started ripping in, and just he said, you know, he started the same way that Mox did. He said, as a person, I love him to hang out with, to go to the bar, get drunk. He's great. But Benny in wrestling equals politician 101. And he said, the Cage of Death he was talking about isn't the same one you think. He said, don't think I don't know what you did at Cage of Death 11.
11?
11. He said it was supposed to be him and Drake for the title, built up for months. He had squashed the Dragons, he had squashed all it, and it was built up. But because you and Drake had that previous match, the first match, that you were politicking to get the match changed in Cage of Death to make it you versus Drake and not Devin. And he even went as far to say, you guys had an awesome match, and no offense, but it wasn't because of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, you ran to Burns, who was the booker, and tried to change the match, and Deej ended up asking him, Dev, would you mind if I switch you to the number one contender match? And he said, no. And then that was like the beginning of his tirade, and it seems like where most of his anger stemmed from is right there. And he said, you stabbed him in the back, and that was where he caught like his huge offense. And that's what he started with. Trent told me before.
Go ahead. All right, let's start with that. Yeah, that's totally fine. Let's start with that. And because I know he said like a lot of things about me, and we could just go in like segments of that. But we'll start with Cage of Death 11.
Yeah.
When it came down to Cage of Death 11, the reason why is, Burns has something to do with this too, because Burns was keeping in contact with me too, saying that it was either going to be Devin and Drake or it was going to be me and Drake, bottom line. That's what it came down to, you know what I mean? And then when he said about, like, trying to take his spot and all the rest of all this other bullshit, I don't know about all that. I was just fucking going with what I was being told. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can't make a decision. You see what I'm saying? I can't make a decision. You know what I mean? It's either DJ or Woods Burns at that time that made the decision. But they were telling me that it was because of the match that we had in October that they were thinking about putting me and Drake at the cage for the title.
Yeah,
and I said, well, either way, I don't care. I just want the second match with Drake. That's basically what it came down to.
Yeah,
I mean, and if he wants to talk about like politics and all that shit, I'm like one of the boys. You know what I'm saying? Like it's really weird that somebody would think that's politicking when I'm being told something and the other person is being told something. You know what I mean? We were both being told the same thing, so we don't know what to fucking do. Of course,
right.
Like, Devin would have that, I guess he would have that, you know, that anger stemming off of that situation. But again, he was believing what people were hearing, and he wasn't coming to me and knowing the truth. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know
it seemed
I mean?
Like
and
once, you know, the whole thing got rolling in his mind, he just made it worse and worse, you know, and as far as his feelings, he just built it up on the negative side, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny, man. I remember, like, somebody was telling me that he said in his shoot that I'm all about myself, that I'm all, that I'm selfish.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And this is something that I really want to touch on right now. Because people are going to think about certain things on whether or not they're right or whether they're wrong. Like, I've been wrestling like 13 years, and this is like what I want to put forth right now. There is a thin line between protecting yourself and looking after yourself and being selfish.
Right.
And what I mean by protecting yourself is, like, with every – in this cutthroat business, in this business, you're always going to deal with shady people. You're going to deal with shady promoters. You're going to deal with shady wrestlers. You're going to deal with backstabbing friends. You're going to deal with people that want to use you for their own benefit, yada, yada, yada. In my career, one of the first things that I ever learned, and people who actually get the business and understand this part of the business, you have to learn how to protect yourself. You have to learn how to protect yourself. And I'm not talking physically, just in the ring. Because everybody tries to hate on you to get your spot. Everybody's trying to compete with you to be the main guy. Everybody's trying to compete with you to have the match of the night. Everybody's doing this. Everybody's doing that. That's how the bad side of the business works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for me, I'm sorry, but, like, I've been around the block, and I've been around shady promoters, backstabbing friends, this and that, yada, yada, yada. I'll be damned if I don't protect myself from people that's been in the business way shorter than I have, and I'll be damned if I'm not going to protect myself from a promoter that just bought a company and has been a promoter for less than a year. I have respect for myself. You know what I mean?
I understand.
And then, like, when he talks about being, only looking out for myself and being selfish, well, the bottom line is, did I protect myself? Yes. Did I look out for myself? No. And the reason why is this. Because I always put the company first and foremost. Then I put the business side on the second end. Then it's the staff.
Right.
Then it's myself. You know what I mean? And the reason why, like, I put that chain is basically the company is the one that I love. That's who I'm wrestling for. The business side, to make sure the company goes. And then the students, because that's the new generation of what's going to make CZW. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My whole big thing about, like, being selfish and all that shit, you know what? It's kind of funny he brings that up because, like, I've never been selfish. You know what I'm saying? I've never been selfish, and anybody can tell you this, and whether it's other guys. I mean, I think even Billy touched on this, and Billy's told me this numerous times. Billy, like, and I'll tell you a story about Gage, too. Actually, I'll tell the Gage story. Me and Gage were drinking out at a local sports bar, and it was just me and Gage there. And me and Gage were playing shuffleboard. And this is, like, when I first came back or something like that. And Gage was noticing, like, my matches. He was, like, noticing my demeanor in the back. He was noticing this. He was noticing that. And Gage comes up to me, and he goes, "You know what, Benny? You've become the leader of that locker room." And I said, "Gage, I'm no leader, bro. I'm one of the boys. I can't take that responsibility and everything like that. If anything, you're the guy, you know what I'm saying? You're the leader." And he goes, "No, Benny. I'll follow you any day." And I was just like, what the fuck? And this is Gage telling me this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I took that to heart. But see, I didn't want to be a leader. I never chose to be one. But a lot of people looked up to me for some strange fucking reason. I have no idea why. But a lot of people looked up to me. And I decided, you know what, I'm not going to be a leader, but I'll lead by example, whether it's before a show, during the show, or after the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then this whole, like, selfish thing, that, like, it kind of pissed me off to a point, because anybody at a show will see this, then, to where, like, I will watch people do promos. I will watch people practice their matches. And people would come up to me for advice, or I would put my input in, and everything like that. Now, I don't know if that's selfish. If anything, I think that's more giving back than anything. You know what I mean? And then, like, I would put my input to help build a company and everything like that. And this whole selfish thing is, like, it gets me to the point to where I just want to fucking... Like, when I first heard about Devin Shooter, I'm not even going to lie to you. Like, it made me want to fly to Philly, go to Maniac, drag him out of his house, and beat the shit out of him when I first heard it.
Yeah, I
you know
really
I mean?
Can't blame you. I mean, I don't, you know, I would hope you didn't do that. I mean, for your own good and, you know, for Dev. Because it's like I told Billy, as much as I like Dev and as much as, you know, like I told Dev myself, I, you know, I don't fully agree with everything anybody says. So... You're going to have your opinion, and it's all good, but, you know, he kind of went off on a lot of shit, and I didn't agree with a lot of it. So, but my whole thing was that I think Dev said a lot of things to sell DVDs, and that doesn't make it right that he used your name or Billy's name or anybody else to get fired up, but I think that's the bottom line as far as his shoot went, because he went off. Like, he had, like, serious anger and shit on that shoot on certain names, and you know, like I was telling Billy, I mean, the guy's the world heavyweight champion right now. I don't know what he's mad about.
See, and this is what I was, this is one thing that I want everybody to know, and then including you real quick, is that I would say maybe a couple weeks ago, fucking me and Devin talked. And it took a while for me to get in touch with him. And then it was actually a mutual friend of us named Missy Sampson. That actually, you know, said you guys just need to talk it out because, like, there's some serious weirdness going on and it's stupid. And me and Devin talked and everything like that. And basically what it basically came down to was a bunch – the conclusion of the whole situation was, like, it's a bunch of he said, she said bullshit.
Yeah.
That's basically what it all came down to. And Devin agreed with me. Instead of coming to me, he believed everybody else. You know what I mean? And from then on, after we talked, me and Devin are cool. You know what I'm saying? Me and Devin don't have a problem with each other. Yeah, me and Devin don't have a problem. It was just one of those things that maybe he even said, like when he was talking to me, that he was fucking lit up. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. And he just went off. And anybody who's lit up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and this includes myself, is always subject to go on like tyrants and shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I understand what he had to say and shit, but like before I even started out like talking to him, I said, look, you should have came to me instead of going behind a camera. I'm only a phone call away if you wanted to know the truth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, another thing that he said that, because he, you know, he was already on his you know, bashing you thing, and he said, Trent told me before I even got in the dub, that Benny is for himself. And then that when you called him and said that you were running Acid Fest, he laughed his ass off because fucking he knew that Trent already knew what it was with you. So, you know, it's just like stuff that he was saying, you know, that it had a little more deep rooting in it than just saying some shit. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to fire anybody up, but, I mean, truth be told, I mean, he said this shit to the national audience. He released a DVD with this shit, so it's,
that's the thing that killed me most out of the shoot, is that he was bringing a mutual friend that passed, and I'll be damned, he should be ashamed of himself fucking even saying that shit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. He should be ashamed of himself for saying that, and that's one of the things that he apologized for, is that he never should have brought Verdi into it. And everything like that, and then that's when we started talking and everything. What he said, the whole access thing. The bottom line, there was six people I think that were helping out with everything. It was me, Homicide, Missy Simpson, Nick Burke, Flash, I believe, Robbie, and then DJ.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, when we got Verdi and everything like that, I talked to Johnny. Johnny was another one. I'm sorry, Johnny Cashman.
Yeah.
And then it was all of us like putting everything together, and we were just thinking about matches and stuff like that. And from, like, when I first told DJ, the very first thing I did is, like, I told DJ, I said, look, we got to do like, a memorial, and everybody was on him about it. What people don't understand is that DJ had to think about it. He didn't go right to it. And it was stupid, you know what I mean? I think when he was talking to Johnny, I think Johnny finally got him to do it or whatnot. The whole Asbestos thing is because, like, we were all thinking about matches and everything like that. And then I made, I'll even say this right now, that at Asbestos, like, a lot of us were putting it on us to make sure that it would be good. I made the mistake of, like I made certain remarks and everything like that that shouldn't have been said. You know what I mean? And it rubbed people off the wrong way. And the reason for that is because, honestly, I just wanted Verdi to have the best event possible. And,
of course.
And, you know what I mean? And, like, that's something that, like, I'll say sorry to everybody and everything like that. And everybody knows about that. You know what I mean? And it was just one of those things that, like, I was emotional. And then while I was out there, I didn't break. You know what I mean? And I had all these emotions, like, in me and everything like that, that maybe what I said, maybe what I thought about and everything like that, that it rubbed people off the wrong way. You know what I mean? And I've already apologized to certain people for that. But it was just one of those things that I didn't, I guess, I'm not trying to make excuses, but it was one of those things that hit me really hard, and I didn't break until after Acid Fest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was really emotional about that.
Yeah, it was a hugely emotional thing, man. I'm only a fan, and believe me, I was choked up, and I didn't want to show up, but I had the support, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
But the last thing I want to say off of the Devin thing is he mentioned also that when, and I just want to segue off of that on, you know, some other questions about your career and everything, less negativity,
mm-hmm.
Is, you know, when he mentioned, you know, the whole thing and running the Acid Fest, and when he told Homicide said that he thought you were an asshole. He always thought you were an asshole. I mean, I couldn't possibly see it that way, but, I mean, from your perspective, I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
My whole big thing is, like, when I was telling people about Acid Fest, I wasn't saying that I was running it. I said all of us, whether it was Missy, myself, D, fucking Johnny, I never said myself. I never said that I was doing it all by myself. If that's the case, that's fucking complete bullshit. I never said that. Like, I would never put myself like, yeah, I'm running as a fast forward. I would never fucking say that. It was all of us. It was a built-in, like, straight community effort. That's all it was. And for him to say that, I don't know why the fuck he would say it, but, I mean, like, the whole Homicide situation is that, it's funny, too, because when I got word of the Devin shit, and I knew you were going to ask that about me being an asshole and stuff, I called Homicide right away, and I said, have you heard about what fucking this dude's been saying about me? He goes, no, what the fuck are you talking about? And I said, yeah, he mentioned you calling me an asshole and everything, and he goes, what the fuck? I'm in shock. And, like, D couldn't believe it either.
Yeah.
And that was straight D's fucking response. He was like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? So,
yeah, I mean,
even if D called me an asshole, I wouldn't have fucking taken it personally. It's fucking, like, me and D are like brothers and shit like that. And so is me and Missy. We're like brother and sister. Like, she could call me an asshole, I wouldn't take it personally, because we know it's just like fucking around and shit. I mean, it's just people taking shit seriously, man. People got to remember, it's wrestling, nothing serious. You know what I mean?
Of course. But coming off of that, yeah, I did want to segue off of that and just say that, you know, I'm going to jump around quite a bit. It's not going to be in sequential or anything, but how did the whole thing come together, you know, with the Strong Style Thugs? And, you know, what was the whole experience like with that? Because, I mean, it was a pretty fucking, pretty much a dream team as far as the Strong Style squad went. And yeah, I enjoyed it, but, you know, how'd the whole thing go down on your end?
Well, basically what happened is, like, I went into Jersey All-Pro and I went into Jersey All-Pro, and this is when Key and Homicide were already a team there and stuff like that. And then Homicide was in the feud with Teddy, and I think it was Teddy and Homicide, and then on the same show was it was low-key against myself. And
right.
I think it was Frank or maybe even Homicide. I mean, I don't, to be honest, I don't even know how it like, happened. But once we, like, got together and talked about it, it just kind of, like, took off from there. Like, because, like, Homicide and myself, we look alike. You know what I mean? So, like, that's,
yeah.
like, a natural thing. Plus, so you add fucking Loki in the mix, who was doing the thug gimmick at the time. It just kind of naturally came out the way it did. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I was happy with it. Before even the Strong Style Thugs even happened, Homicide and myself actually started tagging at PWG here in California.
Yeah, you did the Tango and Cash.
Yeah, and then we became the first tag champs. And
I guess
someone just decided to put us together just randomly. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
it came out working out real good, and I think maybe that kind of helped towards us tagging up in the Midwest and us tagging up on the East Coast too.
Yeah.
But I mean,
yeah.
it was one of those random things that just kind of like took off and stuff. But I'm like D and myself are like real cool with it because like we don't have to talk to each other like in the ring. We just like know what each other's doing. If that makes any sense, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a natural chemistry thing.
Now, I mean, Loki's a guy that, you know, I mean, obviously his work ethic just speaks for itself, but, you know, you've
mm-hmm.
obviously heard, like, a lot of negative about, you know, him being really hard to work with and stuff. And I've also heard a lot of positive as well, but what was your experience like working with Loki?
It was fine. I've known Loki longer than I've actually known Homicide. Then we've worked, I think, maybe twice, and each time was fine. Loki's just, you know what it is that Loki's just very professional, whether it's
yeah.
in the back, in the ring. He's really self-confident about, like, his own abilities, which he should be because he's, like, one of the top wrestlers out there. And he's probably easily top five.
Yeah.
And Loki's always been good to me. We've always had, like, a good chemistry together and everything like that, but I think it's with guys, maybe with Loki's professionalism, it could rub off people the wrong way. But at the same time, Loki's very old school. You know what I'm saying? This is how it should, like, the way he acts is the way it should be. You know what I mean? Like on a professional standpoint, the way that he acts is the way that it should be. And he's all about respect. His number one thing is all about respect. And whether it's respect for him, whether it's earning his respect, or whether it's respect for the business. And
yeah.
it could rub people off the wrong way, but, like, for me, it didn't rub off the wrong way with me because I had the same mentality.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so does Homicide. You know what I mean? Homicide has the same mentality, too.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, I definitely, and if a guy works that hard for his craft and, you know, and you see a guy who's pretty much flawless in the ring, he's not missing spots, he's not showing up lazy anytime, and then a few people
mm-hmm.
do, and they start missing spots, and next thing you know, Loki's legit knocking people out, then, I mean, it's probably not the best thing to do professionally, but you kind of understand
mm-hmm.
when a guy works that hard on his end.
Yeah, because it's one of those things that, like, if he's giving it all his all and he's flawless, and everything like that, like, I would be the same way, but I'm not flawless whatsoever. But you know what I mean? But, like, if I was flawless, I would expect my opponent to be on the top of his game. And a lot
yeah.
of people, when they wrestle Loki, they're actually intimidated. They're scared of him. And Loki's just as light as a lot of people. Like, a lot of people think that he's all stiff and everything like that. The thing about Loki is, like, yeah, he might be stiff on a couple things, but he wants you to hit him back, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's just solid. He's not even stiff. He's solid. You know what I'm saying? He scares off people. That's what it is. And I don't even understand why. You know?
He's built a reputation.
mm-hmm.
I got Nicole, Toby's soon-to-be wife, in the chat room, and Toby said to tell you hi.
Oh, yeah, Toby Klein.
Yes. Yeah, the chat room's crazy. I got Billy Graham in here. I got OMG. I got Nick Papa Giorgio. I got all sorts of cats in here, man. It's pretty
Well, the way that I say things is because, like, the way, I don't know why he's doing it. I'm like nobody, you know what I mean? I just was just a wrestler that wrestled for a company a long time and everything like that. I never considered myself a good worker, never considered myself a decent worker, but I always tell people that I knew what I was doing, you know what I mean? No, I just, like, that's how it is. I just knew what I was doing, and I knew what I was doing in ring. I knew how to get a crowd popping. I knew how to draw emotion from a crowd. I knew how to adapt, and I knew how to, like, handle myself in the back. You know what I'm saying? And I just knew what I was doing. I never said I was good, man. And a lot of people might perceive me as being modest or shit like that, but that's the honest truth. You know what I mean? The only reason why, like, I had good matches and shit is, like, I was just blessed and fortunate to be in the ring with a lot of guys. And they helped me get better. You know what I mean?
Now, I mean, do you think that's accurate? Like, just a flashback for a second on what Dev said. Do you think that the matches that you had with Drake had nothing to do with you?
See, the things with the situation with Drake is, I actually thought, like, it was actually a combined effort. You know what I'm saying?
I thought it was great chemistry.
I know Devin and Drake are really good friends. I know that for a fact.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying? I know they're, like, really good friends, and they probably have a better friendship than me and Drake do. You know what I mean? And that's cool if Devin wants to say that and shit like that, but Drake hasn't said nothing to me about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So in the way that I see things, is, bottom line is that Drake and myself just had natural chemistry in the ring. You know what I mean? I don't know if it was hate on the match. I don't know if people were hating because me and Drake had a good match. I don't know what it was. You know what I'm saying? All I know is that with Drake and myself, it was just natural chemistry in the ring. We talked to each other. We were good. Nobody got hurt. I mean, that's what it came down to. It could be possible just everybody sipping hater rate on the match.
Well, it's very
possible. And I'm pretty sure if you ask Drake, like, he would be, oh, no, no, no. You know what I mean? That was both of our efforts. It wasn't just Drake.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it takes two to tango. I don't think Drake can just create, like, as much respect as I have for Drake. I don't think Drake could just create, like, the best match ever with anybody off the fucking bench. Like, I just don't think he was picking up anybody out there and just saying, well, he's just going to have the best match ever. Like, you know, it was great chemistry. The shit came together really well. And I can't see where it would just be. Had nothing to do with you, but, you know, that's, it's whatever. But to go back fucking much, much further, your debut in CZW was Best of the Best 2, right?
Yeah, 2002, yep.
Yeah, and that was a much longer hair, B-Boy. I was there live,
yeah,
and I had no knowledge of B-Boy until then, and now we got the opportunity to see B-Boy and Super Dragon, Lil Cholo, a whole lot of people. And, I mean, how was that whole, you know, coming into CZW vibe for you?
Well, you know, coming into 2002 with the Best of the Best, I actually contacted John Zandig and Eric Gargiulo at the time, and I sent the tape, actually, to Gargiulo. Basically, Gargiulo basically put me over to John, and John was like, all right, whatever, and everything like that. And on that tape, it was me and Dragon, a couple matches with Spanky or Brian Kendrick, he's known as, and a couple other things. And John was like, all right, we'll give this guy a shot. And then this is where the internet was very pushable towards wrestlers. And me and Dragon were basically the top guys, but, like, we were put over on the internet a lot on the West Coast. And that's how we made a name for ourselves, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what took us out to the East Coast on 2002. But here's a cool story. Like, when we were announced with Best of the Best, there was actually maybe like 20 fans from Southern California that came to Philadelphia to watch us wrestle. And that was really a big deal. I guess we had a pretty good following, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The thing that stood out the most is, like, there was two venues that I really wanted to work in as a dream. One was Kirk and Hall, which I did, and then one was Viking Hall. Before I came to Alhambra, before I came to Arena, before I came to CZW Arena, the Viking Hall. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And just walking into the building and how dirty it was and everything like that, it was like just a dream for me, because it was a venue that I wanted to be at. It was a venue that I promised myself that I was going to go out there and give 110%, because I wanted to be a part of CZW. I wanted to be a part of the roster. I wanted to be a part, and I wanted to wrestle at that venue every month. And I made that a lifetime goal. And right when I was there, I said, look, I told myself, look, Benny, we just got to go out there. We got to do our best, and then we'll go from there. And luckily for me, it was enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, coming off of that, I mean, I mean, somewhere between that point coming into CZW and the very next year, I mean, you rose so much in status that you won the very next Best of the Best. I mean, how was that whole progression from one to the next? And
it was really kind of crazy. And I actually got to give credit to Verdi, Johnny, Flash, and Messiah. I actually got to give them credit, because they were really pushing me hard to John. And with the whole high five thing and how it came about, it just it was one of those random things that just clicked. But the progression of going into the Best of the Best is like, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, the first people, because this, when I first started coming out to Philly, I was staying with John's son, and I was staying with Chris Cash, and I would be out for like 2 weeks going at the time, and that was like my crew. It was Lil John and it was Chris Cash, and they were the first ones that told me that I was going over for the Best of the Best, and I looked at them and I was just like, okay, you know what I mean. And then but the progression and everything like that, I was just lucky, man. I was just fortunate, and John just, I guess, even though he even admitted that he doesn't like the way that I work, because I work differently, because I don't do high spots or I don't do death matches. I was one of the few that didn't do any of that. I was like new to CZW, you know what I mean? And but like, he gave me the ball, and then I went out there and just did the best that I could. And I think the first round was me, Cholo, and Derange. Second was me and Cholo, then me and Briscoe, then me and Sanjay. And all matches I thought were good. I was happy with each match. And I really studied. I studied, and I had to do some cardio and shit like that. But I really studied, like, before I went out there. And one of the tapes that I watched was, I think it was WrestleMania 4, and I was watching Macho Man fucking wrestle 4 times for the tournament. And I kept on studying it. I kept on picking up little things, what to do in each match, and little things to give different things, and everything like that. But I mean, the natural progression, it was like I said, man, I was just fortunate that that he gave it to me. You know what I mean? It was definitely a good accomplishment. It was the first time. No, it wasn't the first time, but it was maybe the second time that I worked like 4 times in a night, and it just led on from Best of the Bestest from there, because, like, how many Best of the Bestest have there been? It's like 12 now. How many Best of the Best have there been? Like 12?
Well, not 10, because DJ skipped last year because he said that he didn't have enough. Oh, man, you're going to get me started on this shit. He said he didn't have enough talent. He wanted to be the best ever. He wanted to be the best talent in the indies. And I told him on the fucking air, I said, you got to be out of fucking mind if you don't think that fucking locker room and a few other people that you've used fucking kind of frequently on shows, you know, B-Boy and, you know, the Ruckuses and, those guys, and as well as the guys who they got upcoming, like the AR Foxes, the fucking Rich Swans, the Adam Coles. Like, if you can't put a Best of the Best together off of what you got without flying a whole shitload of talent in, then you're fucking crazy. And no. Well, next year is going to be so much better. Well, yeah, it was a really good tournament, but there was no need to fucking lose last year. So yeah, we're one short of what it should have been.
You know what's funny about the situation, and all the Best of the Best, I've had, like, in just best of the best matches, I've had, like, close to, like, 30 matches. It's been, like, 3 times, and I've wrestled, like, 4 times, and then did this and everything like this. It's been crazy. And,
right.
What was I going to say was, like, you know, best of the best is, like, it's, like, or just any tournament in general. The way that I see things is that in order to build a tournament, it has to be your solid guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It has to be your guys and everything like that. If he wanted to get outside talent, just get one. You know what I mean? That's all you need. Just get one and everything like that. I mean, it's just the best of the best. You don't really need to have outside talent to make your promotion good. You got to have faith and trust in your talent. That's what it comes down to.
I agree.
And then I think with what you said about him not putting it on and he didn't have the talent, well, it shows how much he has faith in his talent, then. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. It's a terrible statement. And like I said, I mean, he had the flying Sakimoto, which I don't have a problem with you flying none of these people in, but he had the flying Sakimoto. He had the flying Zack Sabre Jr., Brandon Gatson, which, you know, great talent. I know he originally went for El Generico, and El Generico turned him down. Like,
mm-hmm.
he didn't have a booking, and it was like, I'll offer you what you normally get, and he's like, no. So I don't know what's going on there, but, like, he had to fly in a whole bunch of people, and, yeah, great show, but, I mean, these are also people that you can't provide month in and month out. You got to go back to your normal product, and what's what, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. The way that I see things is that, I mean, the best of the best was good. I think it was more DJ wanting to bring in international flavor because DJ wanted to show off his business connections because that's why Big Japan was in. That's why some WXW guys were in.
Yeah.
In fact, I was the one, fucking Brandon Gatson, he's the one that contacted me. About CZW, and I gave him DJ's number, so I was the one that actually got Brandon in there. DJ will probably put himself over for that anyway, but
I'm sure he will.
Yeah, and everything like that. But I mean, it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? I was I like to think that like in every best of the best that I've been in, like it was always a pleasure to be a part of it. And it was always a pleasure working with all the guys that were in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. we'll get into further best of the best in a minute. But another thing I wanted to talk, kind of like dual questioning. KJS5,
mm-hmm.
You were with the High Five. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a fucking faction that, you know, we'll definitely go down the history of CCW. And kind of ask you, you know how that all came about in a minute, but what was it like getting into a match where, again, you weren't a death match guy, you weren't that type of guy, you had one ring full of weapons, another ring full of like a million fucking thumbtacks and a cage overhead, and like, how did you feel going into that match?
Well, going into the match, and I'm pretty sure John will say this, I was nervous as shit. I'm not even going to lie to you, man. I mean, I got all respect for deathmatch workers, and I got nothing but respect for them, but I'll be damned if I do that shit, you know what I mean?
All
right. But like, going into the cage, it was, like, I think I was with the company already 2 years already, and I saw both Cage of Death before we did Five. And it was... It's an interesting sight to behold. I'll say that. and then being a part of it, and which something this is the first time I've ever been a part of any type of deathmatch whatsoever. It was nerve wracking going in, but it was fun being a part of it. You know what I mean? And even though I was in there like in and out and shit like that, it was something that will always forever stick in my mind. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, overall, it just came off as, everybody calls that the best Cage of Death ever. And just to let you know, on the side note, Eddie Kingston just signed into the chat room, told you, suck it, Benny. What up, my COD6 was better.
And you know what, he's just scared. We always battle that, and he already knows which one was better, so I'm not even worried about it.
Eddie's cool as shit. But,
yeah. Eddie Kingston's definitely one of my people, man. He's one of the most realest people I know and shit like that. I know if I had a problem with somebody, that Eddie would talk to him about it, but because Eddie's
true
a
that.
Mutual friend of me and Devin and shit like that. But
it is
what it is. Me and Devin are cool now. It's like a bunch of he said, she said bullshit, man. That's all it came down to.
Nah, it's good. It's good. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, it ain't trying to fucking, like, gather heat or fucking, like, progress things to get worse or anything like that. But I just like to hear the other side of someone's story, because if one person gets to go on a public forum and say stuff about other people, then by all means, let that other person speak his fucking mind. And that's all
well,
it
see,
is.
You see, my whole big thing is this, man. It's like, I don't understand why people do shoots. I do understand one point of it. But I don't understand why people do shoots to talk shit on whether it's me or anybody else that they've come across in their career. I don't understand. If you have a problem with somebody, go up to somebody. You know what I mean? Shoots should be, like, more informative about just the person in general. You don't have to put down or bury people in shoots. Like it's not your job to do that. You know what I'm saying? People bury themselves. You don't need to bury nobody. You know what I mean?
I hear you, but it does sell. I mean, you look at, like, one of the top fucking selling fucking shoot DVDs over the fucking time was the fucking Iron Sheik fucking shoot. And
yeah,
he did nothing but bury motherfuckers. And that's what everybody feeds off of.
Well, everybody feeds off that, and it's also money in Sheik's pocket, too. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean that's what it comes down to.
Oh, right? High sales definitely equates to money. Yeah.
Mhm.
But yeah, you know, it's not the right thing to do, but it's just, you know, I don't know, man. But
it is what it is, man. I mean, I'm just glad that I, you know what I mean, that I that me and Dad's relationship are all right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think
what it comes down to is just that, you know, a lot of people in wrestling get caught up with what people are saying. You know what I'm saying? And there's been times that it has happened to me and shit like that and everything like that. So it's one of those things that, you know, you got to understand something. And wrestling is very competitive, especially between the workers, whether they're trying to be the top dog in the Fed, whether they're trying to get a title, whether they're trying to with this or that or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's always trying to be competitive. But a lot of people forget that it's just wrestling. You know what I'm saying? You don't got to take it seriously. Just show some respect for it. You know?
Yeah. You know, another thing coming off of Cage of Death 5, like I said, you know, the high five and that whole,
yes,
you know, how that whole click came about. And I know, obviously, I mean, you gave credit to a lot of those people even getting you over in CZW, you know, helping you get the spot that you got. So, I mean, when you listed off the people, it was more or less the high five. And but how'd that whole thing come together other than that?
Well, it's actually kind of funny because it was myself, I believe, Flash, and this is when Billy already started with CCW, and this is when I wanted to get into Best of the Best. But it
right.
was Flash was already good friends with Messiah, and they had a mutual friend named Chad, who provided our Detroit Lions jersey. He's like a scout for the Lions and stuff like that. And
yeah, I was gonna ask you where the fucking Lions shit came from. You're a Chargers
yeah.
fan, so.
Yep. And then what was I gonna say? They came to a show, and I was working at it, and me and Billy were cool, but we didn't really know each other.
Right.
And then, like, when they came to the show, I was just, like, fucking around in the ring. They saw me work, and Flash was the first guy. I was like, dude, you're coming to the East Coast. You know what I mean? And then that's how me, Flash, and Messiah, and along with Ian Knox, because, you know, when I first started coming out, not the first time, but, like, when I started becoming a regular, I should say, I was staying with Ian a lot, and we would all stay there and everything like that. And then, so when I was out there and stuff like that, me and Verdi had to match in the third round of Best of the Best 2. And me and Birdie just decided, you know what, nobody else is striking, let's just beat the shit out of each other, and that's what we did. You know? So me and Birdie had, like, a good relationship there, and then the back seats would come out to California, and then I'm from San Diego. Billy was from the Valley, which is like maybe like 2.5 hours up north from me. So when the back seats were here, I would go up there. It was just like honestly like a friendship thing. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what it was. It was like basically a friendship, and it was like in no means by any stake fucking like a clique at all. You know what I'm saying? Like, we weren't politicking. We were just being told what we were doing. We weren't having, like, our ideas pitched or anything like that. We just wanted to be together. You know what I'm saying? And then and then, when you have, like, a natural-born friendship, or not natural-born, but if you have, like, a good, solid friendship, it's just between friends and shit like that, you have chemistry in the ring. And that's how like the high fives came about. I mean, that's basically what it was. It was just friends, being part of a bigger family. You know what I mean? And that's how it came about. And everybody in the high five always had something different to bring, whether it's the back seats, doing the tag stuff. You had Billy doing deathmatch and wrestling stuff, and you had me as a junior weight, you know, wrestling lifestyle. So everything kind of like clicked together. You know what I mean?
It was definitely a good squad. You know, another thing, you know, through time, I mean, you have definitely worked, you know, a few matches and cards and everything for Ian over there, speaking of Homicide and B-Boy. I mean, you guys teamed up over there, I think, too.
Yeah, we had some stuff over there.
There's been tremendous amount of hate towards Ian, and, you know, different things said bad about him and everything. I mean, the company actually, you know, they put out great amount of fucking really, really good shows. So, I mean, as a fan, you know, I got a good amount of love for him, but I also understand if people got beat, they got beat. I act accordingly, you know what I mean? But what was your experience like with IWA Mid-South and Ian Ron?
Well, you know what's funny about the situation is everybody bad-mouths Ian. And everybody wants to say this and say that. You know what? To be honest, Ian Ryan has done nothing but good for me. Ian Ryan was always good with me. He was always good with my money. He always was good with flights. He was, when I was there, he treated me with utmost respect and everything like that. I mean, he might fuck around and say, because I think he was the one that first started the whole bitch boy thing. And I guess, of course, Devin took it seriously. But, I mean, it was it's an inside joke. Every time, because when I first wrestled Ian, he called me bitch boy. I mean, that's what he did. I mean, it's just a fucking name. You know what I mean? I guess he took it seriously. But anyways, I was there.
Devin came mad about it.
No, it was just fucking stupid, man. But, I mean, like, with Ian and everything, it was like Ian was, he was good with me. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I could understand maybe the hate towards him on other workers that maybe he fucked over. But personally, I like Ian. Personally, I think Ian's a good guy. I know he's going through some troubles and shit like that, but everybody has them. I mean, it was like when I was working there, like some of my favorite matches were there. You know what I mean? And it sucks what happened and everything like that, and hopefully he gets back on his feet and everything like that. But I mean, my experience there has never been bad. You know what I mean? It's never been bad over there.
That's cool. I mean, there was a long time after that he stole your corner spot, and he would do the B-boy taunt before it and shit and shout you out. And you know what I mean? Like he definitely he had respect for you. So.
Yeah, I mean, he was a good dude. I mean, a lot of people don't realize this, is that I first worked for Ian Ron in 2003. You know what I'm saying? And then a lot of people, that's when I first worked for him. And then I've known him for like 8 years. You know what I mean? And he's never done me wrong whatsoever, you know?
Yeah, well, that's a good track record, because most people couldn't go 8 months, but...
Yeah, I mean, I was like a solid worker for him for, let me see, I started in 2003, and I was working for maybe like 2 or 3 times a month, and he would be flying me out, you know, and I worked there maybe like 2.5, 3 years straight, you know what I mean? So, he's been good with me, man. It just sucks that, you know, that he had to do bad business with other people.
Yeah. Eddie Kingston wants to know, What do you think about the wild cards match? The only tag match he ever did that he liked.
You know what's funny? I know Eddie's listening right now. He's going to probably blush when I say this shit. Well, fucking Eddie, when he first came into the business, he was still young. And he even said that he looked up to Homicide. And he said that he saw my shit, too, and he looked up to me. And he was the most humble, most respectful guys in the locker room. Now he's the loudest motherfucker in there. And but, you know, it's cool as shit. But, like, like the tag match was fucking awesome. Because the night before, I think I hurt my elbow. And I think that was a strong style tournament beforehand. So I told Eddie and I told Blackjack, and I told him, like, you know, my elbow's a little banged up and stuff like that. Is there any way that maybe we can, or, like, I was thinking we can incorporate into the match, you know what I mean? And the match actually came out fucking just like we wanted. There was nothing missed. Fucking Eddie took a crazy-ass backdrop driver from me. Fucking he fucking took the goddamn, he's the only one, I swear to God, he's the only one, like, if I wanted, because, like, the dropkick I do in the corner, he's the only one that says, I want you to stand on my face, bro. He's the only one that does it, you know what I mean? I have nothing but love for Eddie.
I got nothing but love for Eddie.
Yeah, and then I got nothing but love for Eddie, and he knows that and shit like that. Eddie's the type of guy, like, if I had a problem and I needed him to fly out, he'll fucking fly out, and vice versa, you know what I mean? But, like, the tag match was probably easily one of my favorite matches because, like, because we had fun doing it. You know what I'm saying? It was fun.
Yeah.
A lot of people forget about fun when they wrestle. They just want to get over. People forget about having fun sometimes, you know?
He said never again for that standing on the face shit.
I remember I gave it to Jigsaw, and then Eddie was just like, nope, and never again.
Yep. You know, another thing I want to ask about, because, I mean, I always seen that as something that you were just going to be, like, the head cat of. And, like, I've seen, you know, when PWG opened and, you know, you started being a real big part of it, and, you know, you and Homicide won the Tango and Cash and everything else, and I thought, yo, B-Boy's going to be in the main event of this joint forever. I mean, can you give me a rundown on actually what happened? Because you definitely seemed to split off from that company for a while.
Well, the reason why PWG first started in, what was the year, 2000, I'm guessing 3, I'm thinking? Maybe 2003,
yeah, probably.
2004, something like that. I was a solid guy with the company because basically the company owners are wrestlers, and I don't know if you know who they are and shit like that, but fucking, I've wrestled all of them, you know what I mean? So I had, like, a good foundation and a good relationship with all of the guys. You know what I mean? And they knew that I could do a little bit here and there in the ring and stuff like that. So I worked there, and I was being solid over there. But see, like, I started getting a lot of bookings, like, in the Midwest and a lot of bookings on the East Coast, and I was maybe only home maybe, like, 10 days out of a month.
Yeah.
So it wasn't more me splitting off. It was me just being busy. That's all it came down to.
And
then
it was
when I was in town,
schedule.
Yeah, it was schedule. You know what I mean? And then when I was in town, I'd work for them if they had a show, and if not, then I would pick up another show. I mean, it wasn't nothing big over there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's always been a very big company and shit, and I just kind of wondered, because it's kind of on your home turf, so I was just curious.
Well, I mean, you know what's funny? It's like back in the day, it wasn't even a big set. PWG now is just basically an all-star indie show. That's all it is now. You know what I mean?
They're doing supercard, man.
That's what they do, and they do a supercard every fucking show. And it kind of sucks for SoCal talent in general because, yeah, they take some SoCal talent, but they forget about everybody else. You know what I'm saying? And out in SoCal, you don't get, like, you know, the Chris Heroes, the Claudios. You don't get the Ricochets or anything like that. They have to be flown in. And PWG has money because of their DVD sales. You know what I mean? And PWG's marketing and their networking and stuff is good. But I just, they're just basically an all-star indie set. You know what I mean? Like, I've already contacted Dragon. I told him, like, you know, I want to do a couple of shows and stuff like that. But then I realized, you know what, there's probably not going to be room for me on there whatsoever, because they're bringing in, like fucking, if they have a 20-man roster, 15 of them are flown in, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's hard for me to fucking, like, stomach when somebody doesn't have room for B-Boy on that card, when that's honestly, like, something that would actually draw fans. Like, there's so much in, like, who said it? It was either Dev or Mox, but one of them said more or less, oh, I think it was Mox, but said that whether you came or not, it would draw the same and this and that. Now, there's a good amount of people that fucking want to see B-Boy and just would rather not show up if they know that that's not going to happen. So I just find it hard to believe that, you know, people would actually say, hey, yeah, we ain't got no place on the car for you. We got, you know, shit's all booked up.
It's the nature of the business, man. I mean, like, what it comes down to is, like, basically this. It's like, because I've been around a while, there's, like, a certain amount of money that I want, but I'm always willing to negotiate to help out a company. I did it for CZW. I've gotten a pay cut from CZW four times. You know what I'm saying? Four times. Always decreasing. Always. You know what I mean? So, like, if it helps out the company and everything like that, then I would help out. But, like, I've been around a long time, and I just have standards, you know what I'm saying? I have respect for myself, you know what I mean? It's like one of those things to where, like, wrestling, I like to think that I've accomplished what I wanted to in wrestling, you know what I mean? And now I'm just, you know, I'm happy where I'm at. I'm content with what I've done. You know what I'm saying? So if wrestling, promotions want to book me, great. But I'm not going to fucking...
I hear you.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's not my job. So if you want to fucking book me, then book me. You know what I mean?
Another thing, I definitely want to get your feelings on, because I know you knew to do quite well, and JC Bailey.
Bailey, yeah. Actually, my very first match in IWA was the Ted Petty, JC Bailey was my first match in IWA.
I remember quite well.
Yeah, and then that's when, I guess, Ian liked the way that I work, and JC, I actually knocked out JC in that match.
Actually came into the ring afterwards and said, if you let somebody hit you like that again, I'm going to beat the shit out of you, he told JC, because, you know, you were normal B-boy stuff. And JC, you know, was kind of coming into the way to work, you know, like the strong style worker and stuff like that. And he really didn't. He was just being respectful and taking everything that was given to him, but he was kind of just taking it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, no, he hit me hard. Don't get me wrong, bro. He hit me. Don't get me wrong with that shit. But, before, like, I go into JC, the reason why, like, I was wrestling in the way that I do and when I got there was everybody was telling me, even Ian, right when I got there, said, you know, everybody hits hard. And I was like, fine, that's cool. That's right up my alley. I got no problem with it. So that match happened. But, like that, he was my very first match in IWA, and God rest his soul, man. I mean, he was every time when I was around JC, he always made me smile. We would always talk and bullshit, and when he came back, it was like a blessing, you know what I mean? Because, like, of what he went through, and coming back a cage and everything like that. It was like one of those things to where, like, it was just a blessing to have him back. It's unfortunate what happened and shit like that. I know it hurt a lot of people. I know, when I heard about the situation, fucking Derek Sabato is the one that called me. And when he first told me, I was just like, holy shit, I need to call Drake, because Drake and JC were really close. And Drake was already bawling on the phone and telling me what happened and everything like that, and I was just like, fuck, man, just another one. And this is like right after when Verdi passed too, so it was like two good people just fucking took it away too early, you know what I mean? I've gone through, let's see, one, two, three, four. I've done, like, maybe, like, four different memorials, and I was always a close to woman shit. It was just like the ones that hit me were Verdi. I wasn't able to do the Bailey one. The one ones that hurt me were like Verdi and Cash, and it's something that happens in wrestling, but you never expect it to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely unexpected. You know, a terrible thing, man. I mean, we've lost some of the best fucking wrestlers. I mean, some of the best fucking people in independence in the past couple of years, and definitely between Trenton and JC. I mean, those are two unreplaceable fucking staples in the independence.
I know. And it just sucks, too, because they were both getting on the right track, you know, and it just happens, man. Things happen. They're in better places, though, now.
Yeah, I'm sure they are, man. There's a lot we got to deal with that they don't. You know, being within the strong style, you know, genre that you are in, who were some of the hardest hitting people that you've been in the ring with?
You know what's funny about this whole situation is like the whole strong style genre that goes around and shit like that. Like back in the day when strong style first came, we would hit each other. You know what I'm saying? And it would be like a physical thing. I'm naturally like a physical person because I used to do like kickboxing and boxing, and I'm used to getting hit. To answer your question, like, the strong style has come like totally full circle now because a lot of strong style workers, if they are already solidified as a strong style worker, if you notice, they don't have to really hit hard. You know what I mean? And like it's funny, like it's just one of those things that make them laugh sometimes. But to answer your question, like back in the day and shit like that, I say that when me and Hero were having our series in IWA. We would be, like, really hitting each other really hard, and he hits pretty hard, too. But I think all-time hardest, or, like, the hardest hitter would probably be Joe. And this was before TNA Joe. I'm talking about Samoa Joe when he was, like, Ring of Honor champ.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that.
The motherfucker's, like, 300 pounds and has fucking bear claws, and it's crazy, dude.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't want to get hit by that guy. Especially, yeah, Ring of Honor Joe, for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, TNA Joe's a different animal right now. So
yeah, like, and this is like, I'm talking about like maybe like 2003, 2004 Joe.
Yeah, I doubt that. What would you say the difference is, because, I mean, you've definitely experienced both for working for John Zandig and working for DJ Hyde, the progression of CZW changing hands?
Here's something. That's actually a good question. For working for DJ and for working with John, and this is only my personal opinion, in 2002 to, like, 2005, CZW was on fire and it was at its peak. As much as I don't want to say this, I'm just being truthful and blunt right now, it will never be like that ever again, I don't think. Because there's a couple factors of it. And one of them is, yes, DJ, you know, got the Big Japan thing back together. And he has that connection now. He's doing more connections with other promotions and shit like that. And that's cool and everything. But the downfall of it is in 2002 to 2005, especially like 2002, 2003, CZW was the only fed that was working at that venue. And now everybody and their mom is working
there. Sure, definitely. Yeah.
And they have a different product than CZW. I guess CZW has always had the same product. You know what I mean? And,
yeah,
for the most part, yeah. And then the difference is that John, I don't know what it is, man. Like, to be honest, and like, I'm not trying to bury nobody or anything, but when John was there, it felt like a family. And when DJ's there, it feels like a job. You know what I mean? And that's the way that I see things. You know what I'm saying? And maybe it's a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing, but I mean, when it when it was at its peak, it was a family. It was a straight up family. And then now it just seems like a job, and it sucks. You know what I mean?
Well, right now it seems like there's a whole lot more people that still work there that are throwing other people who still work there under the bus. And I've never seen that during John. Like, I've seen people leave and get bitter and whatever, but right now it just seems like there's just so much fucking fire coming out of people. And I don't know what breeds that. I don't know what does that. But that's the one thing as a fan I could see different. Like, you see, like, a lot of fucked up shit coming out of people. And it didn't really happen like that back then.
No, it didn't. It, like I said, man, it was more of a family, and that was a job. And it sucks for, like, for guys that are working their ass off there, like right now, I wish they could have seen, like, when CZW was at its peak. And they did, because a lot of them were fans in the audience, including DJ. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then it's like,
I gotta have better seats.
And then it just sucks, man. Like, it should be more of a family than having, like, cliques or having to see it as a job and being like, oh, all right, I gotta go to CZW today. When back in the day, it was just like, yeah, CZW show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a big thing.
It was a big thing back in the day, and now it just seems like, you know, people don't care enough. You know.
Yeah. You know, so I just kind of wanted to, like, throw a couple names across you. You know, some people that you work with, I mean, probably more than, you know, other people have. And, you know, people, mm-hmm. some of them have reputations and whatever the case may be. But a guy that, I mean, you came into CZW with, that is, you know, has been pretty brutal on a lot of guys in the indies and everything else, Super Dragon.
Well, it's actually kind of funny because, like, Dragon and myself go back a long time, and I'm thinking, like, it was, like, 2000 and we go back to. And Dragon, if he was in shape and shit like that, he would probably still be putting on good matches and everything like that. Back in the day, Dragon used to take liberties with all the guys that were from his gym, Revolution Pro. And you know what I mean? And I was a guy that came in, and I wasn't taking it. I was giving it right back. And then, like, a lot of people saw that. And it actually sparked up a feud to where, like, it came down to Super Dragon and myself as the most talked about two wrestlers in Southern California. You know what I mean? And our feud expanded, like, for, like, almost, like, 7 or 8 years. You know what I mean? And to this day, like, there's some times that I went down and there were some times that I went up, but, like, our record against each other is, like, legit at a stalemate. It's the same one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think Dragon in his prime was, like, I'll be the first one to admit it. Dragon in his prime, no one could touch him. I mean, the only one that was close to touching him was maybe, like, Loki. You know what I mean? And, I would also say Chris Daniels, those two. But those were the only two that could probably touch him in his prime. I was just, I think that's what it was, is that I was somebody different, and people saw that I wasn't going to back down and let him take liberties. I was out there, and then, like, people knew, like, if me and Dragon were going to wrestle, they knew that it was going to be stiff, they knew that it was going to be... They knew that we weren't going to back down from each other and everything like that. And then I wish Dragon nothing but the luck right now, or nothing but good luck right now. I mean, he's doing awesome in that PWG right now. He's a marketing genius. I think he's the one that does all the editing for the DVDs too. So I mean,
oh yeah, nice.
Yeah, so I mean, I wish him nothing but luck. And I mean, I was just happy to be in the ring with him. And I really think that with us being in the ring with each other, like, earlier on in our careers, that's when we got better because of each other, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you guys definitely accented each other, and, I mean, the back-and-forth matches, fucking backdrop drivers and the fucking head drops and the stiff fucking forearms and everything you guys were doing, really, it kind of set the fucking standard for a lot of what was going on. And when you guys came in, you know, in that Best of the Best, and it definitely opened a lot of eyes. I mean, me and everybody else who was fucking sitting there was like, wow, that's what the fuck is up. And next thing you know, you're winning a Best of the Best, and Super Dragon is a regular, and you're a regular. And, I mean, you know, history speaks for itself after that.
See, the thing that a lot of people don't understand and realize is that when I first came to CZW, I was given something new. I mean, I was a no-nonsense kind of guy. Like a fucking bug. I looked like a thug. I mean, and I was bringing a style that people were trying to do in CZW, but couldn't get it over. You know what I mean? And then, I was just bringing that style, and I stuck with it. And then I was just blessed that, like, a lot of fans appreciated it because I didn't flip. I wasn't spotty. I wasn't, didn't do deathmatch wrestling. I mean, I was different. You know what I mean? I think maybe people just took a new approach to the way that I wrestled and how it kind of, put, you know, the strong style thing force, you know what I mean?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it definitely took hold, you know, the fan base, including myself, man. And, you know, you have support till this day over in the fucking Northeast because of, you know, what you put out back in the day from 2002 to fucking, you know, last scene. And that's,
you know, what's funny is that a lot of people forget how long I've been in the scene. You know what I mean? I've been around a long time. And it's funny to me because a lot of people when they meet me or when they see me, and this is like even the students and or even people that I meet for the first time, like I'm a fun loving guy. I like to fucking party. I'll fucking buy you drinks all night. And just that's how I am. You know what I'm saying? That's just how I am. But when I talk business or when I talk business side of things, or if I give people advice, they kind of like take a step back. They're just like, whoa, okay. It's actually kind of smart. You know what I mean? People forget that I've been around a long time because I give off the impression that I don't know shit. The bottom line is I wouldn't have been as successful and lived off wrestling if I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, if I could for a second, we got plenty of time left, but as far as the live feed goes, we only got 10-15 minutes. So, like, they'll get cut off on the live feed, but the rest will go on the archive. Like, no problem. But before we go on the archive, I want to ask the chat room, all y'all give me your opinions on Benny right now. So that way, you know, it goes from OMG to Billy to Eddie Kingston to, you know, Toby to everybody out there. So that way, you know, we get that across before we're not able to do that anymore. And then, you know, we'll relay that. Okay. people, some people don't want to be name dropped. Kyle.
Just say mystery masked opponent, and then I'll know who it is.
Yeah, mystery masked opponent doesn't want to be name dropped.
There you go.
Yeah, so that's we'll just go from there, and I'll just wait on the response on that. Dad, he's a fan, says, one of the best in the game, hands down. Chad, he's a fan. He said, one of the best in the game, hands down. Mystery Masked Opponent says, shit got real. All
right. That's always a good one.
Toby or Nicole says, where's the beef?
Where's the beef? The beef is in my pants! Just kidding.
Fucking Kingston says, I'm drinking my feeling away.
See, I knew Kingston wasn't going to get all soft and shit. He's too hard rock. I know how sensitive you get, Kingston. You need to stop it, son.
So, yeah, Billy actually wants to talk to you on the fucking phone, so I'm going to have to let him talk on, because that's how Billy does. He always wants to hear his own voice. He doesn't like typing. So we'll talk to him in just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Billy, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, brother.
Oh, here we go again.
Check it out. I got yo, Benny, what's up, man? Listen, I got to say, you guys are probably too young, right? But back in the 80s, like on the David Letterman show, they used to have this bit where Chris Elliott was the man under the stairs. Like, he would just, like, it wouldn't matter who was on, Burt Reynolds, whoever, all of a sudden, like, you never knew, like, Chris Elliott would just pop out of the stairs in the middle of the audience and interrupt whatever was going on. So, like, I think I should be, I'm putting that to a vote to everybody, because I think, like, Billy Graham is officially the man under the stairs on Yakuza Kick Radio, which, it's cool when you come up. It's cool when you come up, you know, and everything's cool, but... Now, Benny, first, man, I just wanted to say, I know you probably didn't get to, like, you know, because you're just, like, such a, you're such a great person, dude, and you, like, you know, you're not really into all this drama and shit like that, and I'm not as into it as people might think that I am, and I, like, I know you probably didn't even take the time to hear last week, but earlier tonight, you know, in the first hour when you were talking, it was just really cool for me because I think you hit on a lot of things that I was perceiving of what I was trying to say about the situation with what people were saying about you. And the one part that really stuck was you actually brought up about, you know, the story of you and Nikki and him telling you, you know, you're a leader. And you're saying, I didn't want to be a leader. Well, last week, coincidentally, if you didn't hear it, I had brought that up and said that, you know, people that want to be a leader are not usually good leaders, and real leaders are usually people that's the last thing they want. But it's, you cannot be a leader by declaring yourself one. You're a leader when people choose to follow you, and that's the experience I spoke of, you know, with my experience of you in CZW, and that goes all the way back to 2005 when I first started coming, hanging around with Toby and Dylan, trying to get me a chance, and I remember I was there when you had your Loser Leaves CZW match with Nate Webb and all. I remember saying goodbye to you and I hope I'll see you again and shit like that. But, I mean, I think another thing maybe we have in common, dude, is the being a mixed-blooded person thing. I don't know if that's a commonality of, like, seeing things in a different light, but I said the same thing that you're saying about, I just don't understand why people – hold some kind of fucking grudge and then they don't come up man to man and say something, you know? And
so
my experience of Benny, and I'm going to say this again, but I wanted him to hear me say it, is that he was all those things. He was a leader. He was a person that, what he said earlier about, you know, paying attention to people's promos, their matches. I told a story last week, Benny, about how the first time when you came back in, you know, the end of 2008, how, like, you hadn't been there in a while, and I was cutting a couple promos with Brain Damage and Deranged, and you were standing there with a couple of the young guys.
Yeah, and I gave it applause,
And you, like, applauded me, and, like, you're, like, saying, see, Billy can, you know, like, pat me on the back, and, like, I mean, you get certain things in the business, like, that sometimes, like, the fans don't get to see, you know what I mean? And it's not money, but when you have respect for somebody, you know, whose talents that you appreciate, that really is like a standard you try to live up to. I mean, for me, that's like, you know, I hang around celebrities all the time, all this shit, we all know this, right? I don't mark out a lot, you know what I mean? But for you, you know, to compliment me, that's like I was marking the fuck out, you know, like that, because that's just the standard that you bring. I mean, and I'm good with Devin too, man. I mean, I finally actually did hear it this week. First time I ever, like, I'm such an anti-piracy guy, and I support Smart Mark so much, and the company trying to build, I'm so against that, but, like, you know, the only way I was going to get to hear it, so I finally heard it pirated. I mean, I'm good with Devin, man.
Why would,
like,
you buy a shoot while a guy's bashing you? You wouldn't want to buy a shoot
just,
with a guy trashing
you. I'll put a spoiler out there. There's going to be another one where I'm sure someone's going to – there's another one being recorded Saturday night, and I doubt that Benny's going to suffer anything in that, but I damn well sure know that I'm going to be getting thrown under the bus here again. Why don't we just wait and see? But let's just put it this way. It would be... But,
what is that?
That's the Three Stooges music, and I'll take it from there. I didn't say it. But anyway, it's just funny because, like, I really got to say, after knowing this for a month and hearing the things that were said and all, man, like, man, like when Devin went off on me, man, like it just, like, I already knew the things that he said about me, but it was like when I heard him say them that he was so fucking angry and
fucking,
like, fucking,
fucking Philly. It's fucking bullshit, Philly. It's fucking
hey,
Philly.
Devin,
this is fucking bullshit.
But I mean, it just, like, I was literally crushed, man. Like, I was crushed, like, how can you, like, hate me so bad? And then when I hear him say, you fucking idiot, you're a fucking idiot, just like fucking Benny. And it's like, dude, you know what? If I'm going to be put in a boat
with you.
You
shut the fuck up. I can't even believe it.
If I'm going to be put in a boat, if I'm put in a boat with Benny, man, I'm proud to be in that boat, man. And like, I seriously,
hear you, man.
You know, and just, you know, everything. Another thing, it's just like, Benny, you still there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here, bud.
Yeah, like to hear you talking tonight, like, it's one of these things where, you know, there's certain people you can still always learn something from, you know, and I so much tonight appreciate that you're, like, calm, you're rational, it's obvious that you really, you know, thought deeply about what you wanted to say, and I gotta say, you know, I guess I should say this too, and I ain't kissing nobody's ass, I'll never fucking do that, even though a guy 24 years younger than me this week gave me some career advice and told me it's time for me to start kissing ass, it's not in my makeup. I think the fans are the ones that ultimately the fans should decide who entertains them, you know, and so what I'm saying is I agree, and I concur wholeheartedly with you, Benny, about the things you said about DJ as far as the things that you do respect about him. I respect those same things. I really do. And that's why, you know, when people were doubting when he took over the company, I said the same thing. Look, this guy is putting his ass on the line to keep this all alive for everybody. You know what I mean? And that's why I supported him. You know what I mean? But I also take exception to the same things that you do. You know, I can't respect. And I can't respect anybody that can't just come to a person. I mean, fuck Billy Graham. But, I mean, when it comes to fucking B-Boy, man, like, if you got a beef,
fuck
man,
Billy
like,
Graham.
How can you – I just don't understand how grown men hold some kind of shit. And that's why I say it is a lot of – it's not just the individual. It is people in a corner, you know, browbeating shit to each other, giving lip service to it, and making it into a bigger issue than it is because – I just don't see many guys that if you wanted to come up man to man and say, hey, bro, man, listen, there's something I don't like. Or there's something I don't understand that you did. And you know, I just can't respect. Like, Benny made a great point about you could do a shoot interview and you could educate people and not throw people under the bus. I mean, for Devin, I feel bad because I think he hurt himself in the long run more than he hurt anybody that he put down. And I love the guy, you know what I mean? I don't even know what to say, but, I mean, you know, it's weird because, yeah, I mean, in other words, the haters now love him because he dissed us all, you know. Now, that's not a way to get over to me. I mean.
Let me talk for a minute and you know.
Yes, sir.
Let him throw his
yes, sir.
His piece.
What do you want me to say?
what shit, man. this is your show, homie. I mean, you know.
I mean,
Billy calls
what
in
what
and the shit changes fucking pace. It's just what he does.
It's fine. You know, it's fine and Danny, and I appreciate Billy's kind words and everything like that. It's just, you know, what it comes down to is just like, I've been, like I always mention this, and it's because people always forget, is that I've been around a long time. I know what to expect and everything like that. When I get blindsided by situations or, you know, what happened on the shoots and shit like that, I expect either a phone call beforehand. Or I expect, you know, for somebody to talk to me man to man, and that's just the way I am because, like, I like the way that I see things is that, you know, I'm 32 years old. If I have a problem with you, I'm a man. I'm going to come to you and do it. Only girls go behind the camera and say something. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so only girls talk behind each other's backs and shit like that. I mean, that's the only real problem. The two problems that I had with the shoot, honestly, was. Him bringing up Verdi, which he should be ashamed of, and two, because like it's not if he had a problem, he should have came up to me. And I find And I even told him this. I said, I found it as a bitch must be behind a camera, even if you're drunk and you're having a good time and, you know, somebody right. talks to you and shit like that. You know, you could be drunk in front of somebody and tell them the same shit in front of their face. And that's the way that right. That's the way that I see things. And with the whole, like, gauge thing and then and everything like that, I mean, like I said, I never wanted to be a leader. You know what I'm saying? I consider myself one of the boys. What I mean by that is that I have the boys back before I have a promoter's back, and that's bottom line. And mm-hmm. Kingston can vouch for that. Anybody
well,
can
Kingston's
vouch for
the
that,
same
you
way.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing, you know, I did want to ask you too because, I mean, they launched the fucking and like you said, locker room leader. When they launched the fucking CZW Wrestling School. As far as I know, the trainers were going to involve you. It was going to involve who else? I mean, there was definitely. I mean, you were definitely on the top roster. I think Sabian was on there.
Sammy, I think Sammy as well.
Sammy.
Like, what about Dahmer?
Like, Dahmer. Dahmer was fired as soon as DJ got the company.
Yeah. Actually, he wasn't fired. Dahmer walked out.
Right.
Dahmer said, fuck this, and walked out.
But what happened with that whole shit? Like, what happened with that whole shit? Because, like, I was like, yo, with that training squad, yo, there's no way that shit isn't turning out talent.
It was, you know what, it was good to go, and the school was good to go. I was actually helping out training before they even did that commercial or whatnot. I was helping Austin, I was helping Tyler, I was helping Cologne, I was helping, like, the young guys with a lot of shit. And then they decided to do the commercial. Unfortunately, like, this is, like, I haven't even told people why I left in the first place. I was living out of Philly, and the reason why that I left, and I'm not trying to get no sob story or anything like that, was because I was having health issues. And, like, the reason why I came out here is because over there I don't have a physician, I don't have insurance and shit like that, but over here I have a family doctor. And the reason why I left was I needed to get some health issues fixed. I mean, I was having bleeding ulcers, shit was going on with my equilibrium. I was having a fucked up knee, a fucked up neck, and all this shit was going on for the past year and a half that I was out there. And I just kept fighting through it. And then there were some shows that I had to miss because the pain and because I was throwing up blood and everything like that. And then, like, I decided, you know what? I need to go get fixed up. And then when I get fixed up, I was going to get in my car and drive cross country and then live my life out in Philly. That's exactly what my plan was. And all this shit happened, especially with the whole anniversary show and everything like that. And then I decided, you know what? I don't need this shit. And I'm just going to do me. I'm going to do me out here. And it was actually kind of a blessing in disguise almost because now I work at a hospital, you know what I'm saying? I'm making good money. I have a good girlfriend, you know what I'm saying? I'm living a grown man adult life now. I lived the life of a rock star for 13 years, you know what I'm saying? And now I'm doing my grown man thing now. And it was you know what I mean? And that's why I left. But my intention was to come back after I got better, and then that's when anniversary shit happened. And that's when I said, fuck it.
You know,
understandably.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, that's for you to put out there, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm glad you took care of it because those bleeding ulcers is where I started, and what it leads to, if you don't take care of it like you did, is what I've been having now, which is this big C in my stomach, and that is not good. And I'll tell you this. This is just honest, and this is your shoot. This is your shoot, cuz, is that...
Oh, God.
Listen, this is the truth, man, that when you went to take care of yourself, and this, I think it really goes back to what you were saying about the fact that when John was there, you know, it was a family, and everybody
what
was...
Dallas, man, what is this?
But what happened is when Benny did what he just said, there was some of us, you know, we hear, you know, like, I knew that he was having those issues, and that was why he needed to go take care. And that was right then, as soon as that happened, that's when fucking these little cliques are in the corner saying, oh, he left because he didn't want to put somebody over in a match, or you know, and this is where that kind of shit starts, you know, and it's like, and that's when I was like, what the fuck, man, you know, like, how do you, you know, where do you equate this fucking shit, you know, and it's all just, it goes to what Ben was saying, you know, it's just like, you don't listen to these fucking rumors about somebody, and I also related to what he said about, you know, just busting balls, teasing, and then somebody walking away trying to think it was some kind of fucking, but dude, I'm glad you're taking care of you, man, and you know, it's just, but, you know, immediately I'm just here to test it. I was there, and I heard. As soon as that happened, when you had to take care of yourself, that's when motherfuckers start throwing you under the bus, you know what I mean? And it really sucks because, I mean, there's King. Like, you just mentioned him earlier being the same way. Like, I can testify firsthand because when
fucking
his last
politician 101 cuss.
Listen, yeah, that hypocrisy is crazy, you know, but I like that you pointed that out, Jay. You pointed that out. Like, who's the politician, you know? And but, I mean, with Eddie, like, his last run with the company, I'll tell you what a stand-up guy he is for the boys, because his whole blow-up, when he split CZW last time, he wasn't standing up for Eddie Kingston. He was standing up for fucking Cult Fiction, okay? That's a fucking shoot, and that's the fucking truth, okay? He was standing up for us because we were being ridden down for some fucking bullshit. And there's a guy that had no place.
When you went out on the security and everything else, right?
Yeah, it was that thing. Is like, Ben, you can understand. My thing was like, this is like Killer Kowalski, Ox Baker, fucking Dusty Rhodes, Wrestling Psychology 101. It doesn't matter if you're the main heels in this feud if you get your shoulders pinned. But if you're the main heels and you're not to the blowout yet, if you get yourself pinned, after you get pinned, you got to beat the faces up. You don't just walk away defeated in the middle of the fucking, you know, keep your heat alive. So we did this whole fucking thing where, you know, King and Drake are down in the ring, and Masada and Brain Damage lost the match. So I tell them, no, I'll beat these motherfuckers up. So we did. So they had worked it out that now a bunch of the mid-card guys and the security are all going to run out, you know? So they run out.
You know what? I know this whole story. Actually, this is the one that fucking Brain Damage was gonna beat up fucking DJ, and then Eddie's it blew up in the back.
Yeah, because the bottom line is DJ's up there yelling at me, get the fuck out, finish this, and then there's Eddie and fucking Drake are staying down. They're the stars, right? They're looking good. They're doing their job, you know. And then these kids they're getting hit by Masada. They're getting hit by Brain Damage. They're jumping back up on their feet. And I'm like, motherfucking guy. And every time they jump back up, I told Masada and Brain Damage, look, that motherfucker's up. Go put him back down again. You know what I mean? And that's why Eddie was mad. Because we're getting blown up on, like, we took it too far. And Eddie's point was like, you're fucking yelling at these guys. They did their fucking shit right. Billy's right for telling them to put them back down on the ground. Because me and Drake are in there fucking, we're down. And these guys are taking more than us. And they're getting back the fuck up. Why are you yelling at them? You know, and so he did something I'd never seen in the business before. I mean, he put himself in front of us, you know, to defend us, that we weren't wrong. And, you know, that was me, you know, me and Brain Damage were taking all that, and I never saw Brain Damage, you know, like, ever disrespected that way and keep his cool. Like, I give him way credit, and I also noticed that, you know, that nobody was fucking shoving Masada around and talking shit to him, because it would have probably went a really different way at that moment. I mean, and so, you know, Eddie came in and tried to fucking, you know, talk straight and say, what the fuck are you doing? These guys are fucking making this shit hot. You're fucking, you know. So for Eddie, I just say, man, like, that's a guy, like, I always respect the same way as Benny, that, like, it just shows that some motherfuckers are real. And also, another great point that Benny made earlier was about, you know, the subtleties of the business that a lot of people don't think of when he was talking about protecting yourself and not talking about physically, you know. And it's like, this was the point that I didn't say as well the last two times we talked about Benny, Jay, was that when I was trying to say, well, look, with someone with his experience to stand up and say, and you know, it's the truth. I mean, look what happened to Toby Klein in CZW. Okay, look what happened to him, how he was devalued because of just nonsensical booking, getting buried to a point of, like, what's his value, you know what I mean? And so I don't think it's wrong for – that's what I was saying. For Benny, with his experience, with his name, and I don't care what anybody fucking says. I don't care if it's fucking goddamn my buddy Triple H, okay, who I like, okay? I'm saying if he fucking says that Benny he's not going to make a difference on a fucking wrestling show. That's bullshit. There are fans that fucking pay to come to see him. There are fans that when they see the B-boy is on the fucking card, they buy fucking tickets. Benny, you are a fucking draw. I'm glad you're humble and all that other shit. But for somebody, I don't care who the fuck it is or where they're working now, to say that you don't make a difference on the show, that is just fucking straight up bullshit. You know, I know better because I know the fans. I talk to the fans. I listen to what the fans like and what they don't like. I think it's important to be in touch with, you know, what's entertaining them. And my point again, for like look what I'm going through. You know what I mean? It's like it doesn't matter what the fucking fans want to see. It's fucking, well, this guy doesn't like somebody. So, you know, fuck, cut off your own fucking nose to spite your own face, you know. And I'll tell you what, dude, no excuse, to hear clearly the story tonight of what really happened with the plane ticket. I mean, there's nobody with a fucking brain on their shoulders that doesn't know what to believe at this point. And for you to be thrown on your bus the way you were, it was reprehensible, man. It fucking makes me sick.
Yo, B, I got a few more people to ask you about, you know, opinions and everything else, and, you know, I just want to get your thoughts on Bobby Quantz.
Bobby Quantz. I love Bobby Quantz. Bobby Quantz is one of my, he's one of my guys out here in SoCal, and I actually worked with him many times. Bobby Quantz is actually a Navy SEAL, and deployed. And
he's
actually back home now. I hope so too. But he's a Navy SEAL. He was deployed, but he's actually back now. So
okay.
I know he wants to work when he wants to and stuff like that. I mean, I really don't keep in touch with Bobby a lot because I don't have a number on him. But I am friends with a lot of people that knows him and stuff like that. I just know that in ring ability, he's awesome. He's one of those guys.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that just have it, and
of course
he's one of those guys that are awesome and shit like that.
Scorpio Sky.
The Sky is a guy that I will always put over. The Sky is a guy that should have came to CZW and he did under the mask. But Sky, I remember Sky when he first started, and Sky has always been a guy that he always tells me that he looks up to me and stuff like that.
Motherfucker's been on
5.0. and he's
how
awesome.
About that?
I mean, Sky's a really good guy. He needs he just needs to get out there more. You know what I mean? I think a couple years ago, like if he would have came across the East Coast scene more, I definitely think he would be like a mainstay in a couple companies out there.
I think so as well. Chris Bosh.
Bosh is one of the funniest motherfuckers ever. Had like one of the best chemistries, or not chemistry, but like one of the, just a good talker. He's like nonsense, but at the same time is awesome. His in ring ability was good too. He really surprised me when I worked with him a lot, and his in ring ability was real good. I know he's retired now and he has a family and stuff like that. So
big up to
Chris Bosh and.
He's outscoring LeBron tonight. No, different guy. My bad.
I fucking hate LeBron. I tell you, bro, Madison's
LeBron
saying it.
Huh?
That's what I was telling you earlier. I told you, Mavs in six. Watch.
Hey, man, settle down. It's fucking 88 to fucking 93 right now. We got a lot of time.
I've been watching the games on.
The fucked up shit is Wade went out, Wade's back, but Wade went out, his hips is fucked up or something, but.
Yeah,
nah,
you
man,
can tell the way he's running right now.
I'm telling you, yeah, he's hurting, but.
Anyway, go back to this before we start talking baseball.
DC just fucking do good for that. This shit is coming back. Anyway. Paul London.
Paul London is one of the funniest motherfuckers I know. He's one of the biggest potheads I know too.
Yeah.
He
looks like
I like him a lot more now for some reason.
Dude, he is one of the funniest people that I know, man. And when I came back to SoCal, I saw him. And I mean him, like I've known Paul London and I've known Spanky or Brian Kendrick for the longest time when they first started in SoCal, or actually Paul started in Texas, then moved to SoCal. And then I used to have matches with them all the fucking time and shit like that. We just always, every time we see each other, we always talk about the old matches and stuff.
He's nasty. But yeah, let's talk about the people that was in the chat tonight. And let's start with OMG.
The mystery master opponent?
Mystery master opponent, Kyle Threat. Fucking ego puppet, whatever you want to call him.
Well, first and foremost, I want to say God bless America to him. And then he's definitely. No, I love fucking OMG. Like when I went out to Indiana with the Naptown Boys, they treated me like one of their own, and everything like that. And OMG was he's one of the funniest motherfuckers you'll ever meet. And he's actually cool. He's just one of those cool people. So like if you go out, you have to have him with you. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's like a little sick puppy that you want to show everybody that like he's
a little
so cute.
Sick
that you know what I'm saying? He's like a little sick puppy that you want to show everybody that how cute he is, just so like everybody could be on your good side. That's OMG.
Oh shit!
I love that kid. I love him myself, by the way. He's married to a Mohawk woman. He freaked me out. He came in CEW's locker room, starts talking Indian to me. I'm like, dude, where the fuck did you learn that?
Toby Klein.
I haven't really chilled with Toby as much as I wanted to, but every time I was around him, it was like a lot of, every time I was around him, he seemed cool, you know what I mean? I know, the thing about Toby that a lot of people don't understand is the motherfucker can wrestle. He's labeled as a deathmatch wrestler, but the motherfucker can wrestle. Him and Masada. Masada can wrestle his ass off. And I wish I had more time with Toby than I did, but I know he's doing well and everything like that. So, I mean, shout out to Toby and everybody.
Hey, there's always the future, brother.
That's true.
It sure is.
Keep your boots clean, man, all right?
Eddie Kingston.
I have nothing but love for Eddie. Eddie already knows this. We already have, like a no-homo-homo thing going on, so it's fine.
No-homo-homo thing, huh? It's like kind of fades off in the no-homo for a minute.
No, Eddie, like I said, man, Eddie's like, I remember Eddie when he first started, one of the most humbled and respectful guys. He still is, but he's one of the loudest motherfuckers in the locker room now. And, I've seen him grown from a boy to like a man in wrestling, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I have nothing, like I said, I have nothing but love and respect for him. And he's definitely a guy that I can always count on if I need him for something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I love Eddie, but unfortunately he only shows up to my tribute shows. Our third show was supposed to be Eddie, and then some shit came up, and shit hasn't happened since. That was July of last year. I had him on for the JC tribute. I had him on for the Larry Sweeney tribute, and then still no straight Eddie, just Eddie. You know what I mean? So,
I got some strings. I can pull some strings.
I know for a fact that when Alex Fass or Larry Swing, I know it really hit Eddie pretty hard.
I'm sure.
So I know like that was. I know that was a big blow to him.
And the last person. Oh, one of those people in the chat room that I definitely got to address and on the line. That what's your feelings on Billy Graham?
Fuck that skinny Indian. I'm just kidding. I like Billy. I've never had a problem with Billy, and Billy's always one of those guys that's been straight up with me. In fact, Billy's one of the guys that actually stood up for me. You know what I mean? And I think he was the only guy that did. And I have nothing but love for Billy, and then it's fucked up what happened to him and everything like that. I just think he's an asset as a manager and a mouthpiece. And
fucking Billy? Fucking bullshit. That's fucking bullshit. You're not going to fucking tell me Billy's a fucking asset? It's fucking bullshit. I ain't dealing with that. Go ahead.
I just think he's a good manager and a good asset and all that shit. I just think...
My fucking asset.
Jay, why you gotta step on when he's saying something nice about me? That's when you gotta step in with this shit. You know what I mean?
Dude, you know.
Benny, that's what it comes down to.
Benny,
you've been
Benny,
on
Benny.
85 times. It's no big deal.
Thank you, Benny, very much. I really like that. That means a lot to me, man. I really appreciate it a lot.
Of course, man.
No problem.
I do what I can.
Okay, so like I'm keeping a scorecard. I got Benny, I got Bull Payne, I got Zandig, I got Toby, I got Lane, I got these are the Eddie Kingston. These guys are on my side. Okay, all right. I'm just keeping a score sheet. You know what I mean?
You know what? I got a question for you, Jay.
Oh shit.
All right, because you're very unbiased about like a lot of situations and with Billy's story and my story and everything like
right.
that. And I'm pretty sure that you've talked to Billy and you've told him your input on what you think. So since of what I said, whether it was DJ Mox and the whole Devin thing, what's your input
on the you and the what? Like
just what I talked about.
The January shit. Or
no, just everything, just anything.
Just the whole picture.
Everything
whole
that
picture.
I, yeah, the whole picture of it.
Well, honestly, the way I go off is, listen, I mean, DJ was never a respectable worker. He was a guy who I fucking put my head to the fucking floor when his fucking music hit, when he politicked his way, speaking of politicians, when he politicked his way into the fucking main event before he owned the company. And it was fucking Danny Havoc versus Brain Damage, and fucking next thing you know, DJ Hyde's music hits, and everybody goes, oh, why the fuck does this need to happen? And everybody looks at the fucking floor. So those were the fucking emotions I had right there. So when he bought the company, it was like, why does he need to buy the fucking company? But I continued to fucking support. Yeah, either way, you know what I mean? I continued to support. I love the fucking company since 2001. Crushing the competition fucking February 2001. So I've been supporting since, and I'm just like, again, like you guys have said, I give him respect for keeping the company going. However, I never, ever respected him as a wrestler. I don't think he's credible as a wrestler. I don't give a shit about his matches. There's not a single match he's been in that I can tell you about that I liked. But
I thought him and Deranged, the Cage of Death, was good, man.
Well, I beg to differ, but
okay. That's
not Deranged's fault. I could just say that, I don't know, man. I'm not likely to fucking believe DJ's side of things because he's a bullshitter. He's a businessman. He just likes to fucking tell you what you want to hear. But when you know shit from being there for 10 years, it's not easy to just stomach that shit and swallow it and just be like, oh, okay, then I guess you're right. Like, nah, dude. Like, I fucking traveled 2 hours to get here, and I know what the fuck the business is, and I know I don't like what you're doing. And they're just like, well, it's a build. You just got to fucking deal with it and everything else. And, you know, some people just don't want to be part of the program. And it's like, I'm not buying it, dude. I'm not buying it. So, honestly, like, nah, I would definitely side with your side of the story. And, I mean, I don't know what the fuck happened with the flight. I really don't. But if someone actually said that, this is not in my fucking best interest to be fucking flying out there right now. I wouldn't fucking blame them for that either.
Jay, I think that the main thing that was clear here is the truth of what he said is that he didn't do anything that was motivated by himself or his own selfish needs. You heard Benny say earlier tonight that he didn't think it was worth it to hurt DJ's pocketbook and underpay other people if it's going to cost $800. The man said he wasn't worth $800 flying that. Now, some might not
agree
with that.
We all know DJ carries a pocketbook, so that is very, very, very accurate.
No, but I mean, for Benny to put the welfare of the whole crew to get in front of himself and then to get thrown under the bus, this is what I take exception to.
It is what it is, but I mean that's just my whole thing. Like I side with the worker, honestly. Like I'm not a worker. I've never been a worker. I've never claimed to be in the business. Yeah, I trained for like a couple months and stuff, and I got the privilege of training with Manny Fernandez, and that was fucking phenomenal. But although I learned a few things, the only thing I gained out of that is respect for the fucking workers, because that, you know what I mean? Like, I never became, like, a full-fledged worker. That's never been part of my life. But I do respect the shit out of the fucking workers, such as Benny and such as so many other people who have done, like, the top fucking level of that. So, I don't know, dude. There's no way of me knowing that. I'm not a backstage dude, so there's no way for me to say that, you know, yeah, DJ's right, Benny's right, but honestly, in the business, fucking, I give a 1,000,000% more respect to Benny than I ever would fucking DJ. So,
you know what's funny? You know what's funny about the situation that I should have touched on is that with DJ, like I said, it's not about burying DJ. What it is about, like, I'm very skeptical about a promoter wanting to be a promoter, a booker, and a wrestler. There's only one thing that you should do if you're a promoter, and that's be a promoter. I mean,
promoter.
CZW is not nationally televised. People don't follow angles. It's just an indie fed. You know what I'm saying? And DJ puts himself in big feuds. He always needs to talk. He needs to be on the show and everything like that. And
they
he doesn't
talk.
Need to do that.
He just doesn't need to do it.
You know what I mean?
Both of you have worked with him. Do you know what's in the ceiling that he keeps looking at?
No,
but I think what Benny just said is I agree with that so much.
No,
I've always been an advocate, and this is the other areas where people are not saying what else Billy Graham has done. Like, here I'm a professional screenwriter, okay? This is what I do. I write. I never wanted to be the booker. I never wanted to be in charge of anybody. But I think that one of the reasons the indies can't grow past the point they are, and I don't mean you got to become competing with what's on TV every night and think you're going to get to that level, but I think that the audience certainly has for generations now been weaned on having those angles and having those storylines, and they want to care. So I've always been throwing my hand up saying, hey, we got to have some continuity. We got to have some depth to these angles to keep people hooked. And then on top of it, okay, like just for me, Benny said something nice about my ability, you know, to talk. And here you have the fans 3 years in a row vote me best mic work, right? And I get the mic in the ring 2 times a year. And DJ's out there every show talking for 15 minutes, saying nothing. And I watch the crowd yawn, boo, lose focus, get tired, start yawning. And then the next thing you know, after 15 minutes of him talking, then somebody like Benny comes out and kills himself in the ring, and they're already fucking asleep before he gets out there. I think it's crazy. You know, I think I said this before. It must be hard to resist the temptation when you're in charge to not make yourself into the main character. But I think it's an obvious. I mean, I think that the company would benefit hugely if he was instead the promoter, and that if Mike Burns was going to.
No, I agree.
If Mike Burns,
you know what's
didn't
funny about
continue,
the situation? I'll tell you something that you guys probably don't know. I don't know if Billy knows this. When DJ first bought the company, this is a straight shoot, he had no idea what to do and everything like that. And it comes down to, like, booking and stuff like that. And basically, he said there's 3 guys that he trusts to help in the back, help on the matches and everything like that. And those 3 guys were Drake, Sabian, and myself.
Yep,
I
knew
that.
Drake, Sabian,
us four and myself.
And
us four put together the DJ's first show. And it's been one of DJ's better shows that he's ever had.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which one was that?
I forgot which one it was.
That was wasn't that the cash show in 2010?
I don't remember, 2009
cash show, I think, was that show. And then, I mean, and look, certainly the bottom line is, and then when you guys did a good job because you guys are workers and you understand. And everybody was already moving in a situation like when he first took in and you guys did that. And then when Burns came in, it was like everybody was happy for a while. Like everything was going in the right direction, man. You know what I mean? And, you know, it was like, here comes Benny's back. You know, here comes Kingston's back. It was like you were saying about, you know, he was taking the right steps to mend fences and you know, like with the other, with BJW, which I got to say this too, man. A lot more credit. Nobody's saying this anywhere, but 90% of that men's fence with BJW, and the real reason that deal happened is because of Brother Masada, man. That's the reason why. Okay.
Oh, yeah,
what are you talking about?
He's
on
not
BGW.
Getting yeah, he's not getting any credit in that. And I think it's another thing that's an injustice that's happened, you know, because but everything was going great with Mike, and you could see everything was going in the right direction because now all of a sudden he's getting the family back together and he's getting the people that are serious and really can bring their A game. And then as soon as Mike started being stifled, you know, and then when he walked out, I mean, this, which was a very complex, I mean, it wasn't just over the booking, very obviously the business, lots of other things, but what I'm saying is certainly there's nobody who's going to refute whether Mike Burns is a better booker than DJ. I mean, because just the basic psychology went out the window. I know the difference in what the plan was for us and then what happened when he took over. And like I said, it wasn't just making us look weak, but, you know, under Mike's plan, we were supposed to lose those two matches at TOD, and then I do that.
What do you think phenomenal booking of DJ versus Little Mondo is, you know? I spoke my fucking opinion on this, and I got heat off of Big Brother and everything else, but
Well, listen, I'm first of all, I'm really, really glad that the kid's getting to do something because I really like him
too.
A lot.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. I like
you know,
the dude.
As far as it having to be DJ, and as far, I mean, even like just reading and hearing from the other fans and the other workers what happened at that last show when here they've got this match everybody's been waiting for, you know, Cole and AR Fox. And then he comes out and interjects himself in that scene, too. I mean, I just kind of think, like, it's what Benny was just saying. I mean, why the fuck you got to, you know, because anywhere else those guys are working, I mean, look at the other promotions those kids are working in, man, and their shit is over, man. And it just, it kind of just shit on the whole fucking thing. But I don't know, like, I mean, I don't think anybody's really taking it as seriously for Lil Mondo because of
the No, but I'll definitely.
You know what I'm hoping that happens? I'll be the first one to tell you. I'm glad that Little Mondo's going against him. Because if DJ tries to do, I'm glad Little Mondo's trying to go against him. Because what people don't understand is that Little Mondo is a little badass. He's a little MMA
fighter
now.
Yes, he is.
So I am hoping, and I am hoping if DJ tries to take his liberties with him, that Mondo will beat the shit out of him. And not only that, choke his ass out.
Well,
because he always used to beat up Mondo. He always used to beat up fucking Danny Havoc. He always used to beat up all
Danny Havoc
guys.
On Wednesday nights for 3 years, right? Wednesday nights in front of 15 people every Wednesday night. Danny Havoc getting assaulted. You know what I mean? Like, why?
Yeah.
Why? But, let's put it this way. You mentioned Lil Mondo's brother, man. Like, I certainly think that Lil Mondo's brother has taught him enough to know that if he goes in there, he needs to fucking protect himself and give it right back.
Well,
no, you know,
Drew still doesn't know how to handle himself as a professional because he's still fucking battling fans and throwing cheap shots and doing whatever the fuck. And that's fine, but bottom line is,
you don't think that's
like,
just part of his character, bro?
Character, nothing. He's not over. He's fucking not over. The most over he was is when he fucking disengaged the second he got into fucking jail. And outside of that, he's a bland fucking worker. He worked hard. I won't take
that
away from him.
I think they should have ran with that.
My thing is this: is like I mean, as you know, Jay's perspective on Drew. Drew, believe it or not, is really capable of having a good match, and I've seen Drew have good matches.
I agree.
I don't doubt that one bit.
And Drew gets the business. You know what I'm saying? And what people don't understand is what happened with the game thing.
I don't think he gets the business.
The reason why is because I just think Drew knows it because he plays a different character in another promotion, and he knows